Okay, whatever. Yes, sorry.
You got a sweet voice.
We're live. We're live. We're recording right now.
You have a sweet voice.
Wow.
So, it's my job to introduce this podcast. Shut up. I have to introduce the podcast. We're recording.
Excuse me.
And this is all going on it, just so you know. As you can probably tell, this is a special episode. We're doing this episode in English. Für unsere deutschen Zuhörer, die kein Englisch können, Entschuldigung, aber wir haben heute einen Gast da. Einfach weil es heute ein bisschen entspannter abläuft, es ist Feiertag, es ist Weihnachten. Welcome to Two Blacks and a Jew, Special Edition, Three Blacks and a Jew. Our guest tonight is a good friend of ours. His name is Ahmed.
Woo!
Yep. Hi, everybody. My name is Ahmed, like Nathan just said.
Well said.
Special conceit of this month's episode is that we're going to discuss religion and holidays because it's the holiday season. And
since those are very, very light topics, we decided to drink as well.
I was about to say, like, that's not the big conceit. The big conceit is that we're going to get drunk off our rockers as this podcast continues.
Exactly, because how can you discuss religion
without
while
some
sober?
Without some Glühwein and some mead.
And Glühwein, mead, and whiskey mixed in?
Yes, right, yes, yeah, it's mead with whiskey.
Cheers.
And...
We highly recommend that you also start drinking while...
Yes, drink with
Unless
us.
Unless you're driving, don't drink and drive.
Yeah,
you know?
Then drink water. Stay hydrated.
Same exactly.
Now, the fun thing about this episode is that today we have... one person was raised Catholic. Say hi.
Hello, my name is Vincent.
One person who is an atheist.
More or less, yeah.
One person who was raised Muslim.
Hello, my name is Sal Ahmed.
And one Jew. Hi.
It's also like, especially because Nathan and Ahmed, they're very like stereotypical religious names also in your respective religions.
Oh, super.
Yes.
Like,
I can't win. I have the most common first name, middle name, and last name.
It's tough.
Yeah.
It's our life.
Yeah. So this will be a light episode. We're going to talk about religion and our religious upbringings in part, and also about what we like and don't like about the holidays, I guess.
Yep. Exactly, because contrary to popular belief, especially in Europe, you know, the religions aren't just Christmas, you know, the religious holidays. There's a lot more, and we're going to dig into that, because, for example, your holidays just passed, Nathan.
Absolutely. So my holidays just passed, so we start with Hanukkah, huh?
Yep. Yes.
What
yes.
is Hanukkah? For those
yes, we
who
will.
Don't know.
Yes, tell us about Hanukkah.
Hanukkah...
And don't just focus on the Jew coins, okay? Don't just focus on the gold coins. There's more to it.
Yes, yes, the Hanukkah gold. Yes, that's what the holiday is all about. So, please always keep in mind that while I was raised Jewish, I stopped going or attending synagogue when I was 18, when I could basically tell my parents, hey, religion, not really my thing, so I'm just going to do my own thing now. So I might not be the best source for things about Judaism, so I will tell it as I remember it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we still celebrate Hanukkah with my family every year. My family still is... It's not very religious, not Orthodox, but religion is a very central part of the family. I mean, my family still meets every Friday evening for a Shabbat dinner, so
I've observed from your family in particular, that there's a that religion isn't used as familial unification in a way.
Yeah, as I said, I'm a cultural Jew. I'm not a religious Jew. So Hanukkah, what is it? Actually, Hanukkah is my favorite, is one of my favorite holidays, not just because of presents, but also because of presents.
Quick interjection though, is it Hanukkah or Hanukkah?
It's actually Hanukkah.
Hanukkah.
It's, Americans say Hanukkah because they can say ch. Ahmed can say
truth
because
so much truth in that.
Yeah, it's a difficult sound to make for Americans. Mm-hmm. Like they say, oh God, all the Mexican names.
yeah, no,
Jesus. It's Jesus.
Uh-huh. Yeah, in America, so my name is not a
Jesus.
Jesus.
Yeah, in the States, nobody says Ahmed, they say Ahmed.
Really?
Or Ahmed. One of those two.
Right.
Or they butcher it and they come out with Ahmed.
Yeah, Ahmed.
But then
I've choking.
Heard that Germans also can't pronounce Ahmed because they make Ahmed or Ahmed.
No, it's Ahmed. Actually Germans are actually really, really close to it. That was one of the first things I noticed when I moved here.
Right, because I met an Ahmed and he said that Germans still mispronounce his name.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but it's still pretty close. Like, it's a lot closer than it was in America. Like,
Don't go down the rabbit hole of mispronouncing names with me, all right? Because Americans say Ezeret, which sounds like...
Ezeret!
It's terrible! Germans say Atzeret, which is just terrible.
Atzeret, I really like Atzeret.
Oh, God. So, anyways, back to Hanukkah.
Back to Hanukkah. basically, every Jewish holiday... is always a holiday that remembers a certain thing that happened in Jewish history. It's always, throughout the year, Jews remember, okay, what happened on this day, what happened on this day, what happened on this day. It's usually like people shat on us. That's what happened in Jewish history.
Not literally,
metaphorically.
Like, I mean, maybe they were into kinky stuff like that, but it's down the majority. Like
okay. And stuff.
So yeah, this is how many minutes in?
This is weird.
And we're already with blasphemy. Last
so I think we're 8 minutes in.
Not bad.
That's good. That's good.
We're still making space. Anyway, continuing on with the
Hanukkah
story.
I have actually a very smart interjection with the question, because you just said like every Jewish holiday is basically because people shat on Jews.
Yes.
Your words, not mine. I have a question from a white mid-30s Christian American from Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So like flyover state, Ohio. And he says... quote, I've always wanted to know if Jews also make jokes about the quantity of Jewish holidays. I think I've only heard it once from a Jewish person. Like, Canadians surely don't, not that apples to apples make, it's a comparison. That makes no sense.
So far, I'm not really sure if I understand the question.
If I understood it correctly, he basically saying that there's so many Jewish holidays that no one who's non-Jewish can keep up. And if Jews also make jokes
I'd say talk to a Catholic. I mean, you know how many holidays Catholics actually have?
Vincent
just look at the Bavarian calendar.
Why don't we try listing all of them?
basically,
the year starts with Christmas.
we'll have a holiday battle in a second.
Right,
like which religion has the most holidays?
But I think you need to finish your Hanukkah.
But yeah, I still have to talk about Hanukkah. So Hanukkah is about how... I'm pretty sure it was the Greeks. The Greeks. You know more than me. Okay, great.
No,
this is wonderful.
That's not it. But we had our group or lab holiday party, our year's end party 2 weeks ago, and we also have two Israelis in our group.
Oh, okay.
And then the Jewish woman in our group gave a little. Introduction on what Hanukkah is.
So why don't you do this now?
Because I had a couple of beers. But something about...
The Greeks were laying siege to Jerusalem. And the lights in the temple needed to be lit. There were holy lights and there was only... enough oil left to light the lights for one day. But that oil, it was a miracle. It kept for 8 days. It kept the temple lit for 8 days. That's why Hanukkah takes 8 days. That's why it's a holiday that takes eight days. You get presents every day, which is nice.
And you light the
Hanukkah. which is basically, it looks like menorah, but it has one more candle, I think. For every day, for every, so it's, it has eight candles, and for every day you light one candle. And it's a nice little ritual.
One candle to light the others.
Yeah, use one candle to light the others. That's a Jewish conceit again, because you're not allowed to work when Shabbat starts, or when the holiday starts. And so basically, making fire counts as work. So once the candle is lit, the holiday has started.
Right.
So you make fire to light one candle, and with that candle, you light all the other candles.
And also, is there any like musical component to this lighting?
Oh, of course. Like music is a very, every prayer in Judaism is a song. Every prayer is a song, and I have all those melodies stuck in my head. If someone starts singing that song, those words just come bubbling back up, even if I haven't said them in years. It's just suddenly there.
Yeah. Should we get out our lighters while you sing a little bit for us?
I'm not. This is, see, religion is still, while I consider myself an atheist these days, religion is still, and spirituality is still a very deep-seated thing. And I consider it impious. To say the words of a prayer when not actually praying. I couldn't do that.
I thought that was just me.
I have the exact same problem, actually.
Okay, let's talk about prayer.
Yeah, let's
talk about indoctrination.
Yes. That's basically what it is. We are indoctrinated. Like, it feels
blasphemous.
It feels blasphemous. Yeah. Yes, that is the right word. It's wrong. It's wrong to say the words of a prayer when you're not praying, even though I don't believe in God.
Yeah, but it's presented to you as such a serious thing that if you make a joke out of it, you still kind of feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I have this whole thing, like, you know, if I say the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, I cannot say the name without the rest of it. Because in Islam,
you have to say it.
You have to say it. I'm like, I feel dirty if I don't. Mm. Like, I feel wrong. And eventually, later on in the day, I just spew it out.
I have that thing with the name of God.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't say because Jews...
I know you never write it.
Like. Don't say... like. Jews, even talking about it is different.
Take your time. Take a sip.
Yes.
Take a breath.
I've already taken a couple of sips. Jews only ever say the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
We say Adonai, which basically means Lord, or Hashem, which basically means Lord. We never use a name.
Even though there is a name.
Yes, and every time, it usually happens in Germany, every time a German comes up to me and says, every time a German comes up to me and says, you call God Yahweh, right? And I'm like...
You flinch.
I flinch, like just saying that just now.
Right.
I'm like, no! It's pronounced Adonai because it's the Lord. We don't, whatever. And it's just this deep-seated thing. Like, you grow up with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just stays with you. And even, I don't believe in God. I really don't. I think organized religion is a problem that needs to be discussed. And I still have this deep-seated thing of... saying the Lord's name is blasphemous.
Mm-hmm.
And so you, Vincent, as a Catholic or former Catholic?
Yes.
So this is where you out yourself as Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad, Vincent.
Well, I don't think Mom would care. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's see. What's your question?
Do that whole kind of, you know, blasphemy, because all three of you had these, like, very, it wasn't just you guys saying, oh, we don't say the name of God or the Lord, or God specifically, but all of you three, because the listeners can't see this, you had physical reactions, all three of you.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm so curious about that. Like, how is it for you as a Catholic? Does that differentiate from Nathan's Jewish experience, or?
I mean, there's not... for example, the stigma of saying the Lord's name in Christianity, there is, in theory, the rule that you shouldn't make an image of God, which, of course, Jews also have.
That's the same in Islam, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead. I'll say my thing afterwards.
We should definitely talk about Abrahamistic origins later.
But I do have to disagree for one second, like, right. Although I'm not Catholic, but thou shalt not take the Lord's names in vain, isn't it?
Well, in vain would be something like, you shouldn't say, oh God, during sex.
That, yeah. I'm going to hell.
Come to think of it, that I don't think I do.
So what do you say?
And then we get into linguistic aspects of bilingual people and their sexual habits. Anywho, back to Catholicism.
there's a very thin line between those two. No, but I mean, day to day, it still feels weird to make religious jokes.
Mm-hmm.
So if I, especially if it's about, so I'm not as sensitive, I think, when it comes to Catholicism, but then when it's about other religions, especially then, it's very thin ice, I feel like, because I know the way it feels,
mm-hmm.
if somebody kind of transgresses on your religion,
mm-hmm.
If you actually do believe it. So I try to be kind of...
You get overprotective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You really do, because I remember, because I've known you for years, and I remember having certain discussions about religion and Catholicism and whatnot, and I was perhaps a bit insensitive and whatnot, and you get really protective, or you used to get very protective of it.
Yeah, I mean...
I still probably would.
I'll also get very, very overprotective just of other sense of religion and spirituality. I can totally...
You can empathize.
I can empathize. And it's... I could again, basically, relate everything back to Star Wars.
Well, you have 2 minutes.
No, not again. Back to Catholicism. So, okay, so then kind of coming back to
But for you, so for you, it's... what did you say was your problem with...
So I think my...
where do you feel...
My where I would draw the line would be... being quote unquote blasphemous inside a church.
Uh huh.
Mm.
Because it is the most holy place. And for that reason, it just feels viscerally wrong.
And this is, as a Jew, I get really confused in churches because, I have the same thing. Like, I feel this is a religious place.
Mm-hmm.
I have to act accordingly.
Yeah.
But what does a Jew do in a holy place? A Jew covers his head. What do you not do in a church?
You don't cover your head. Also, that whole...
It's like every time you go into a church, you're supposed to take off your hat or whatever you're wearing.
Right. I mean, that depends geographically. Maybe I should specify.
Okay.
Because
every church I've been to in Europe or...
Right. I mean, if...
you basically...
Because, I mean, it's still in the Bible that, for example, women should cover their head and men should keep their hair short. So that is something that, for example, my father's side of the family takes seriously. So whenever my sister and me would be in Nigeria, then my sister would have to cover her hair to go to church.
Yeah, but men have to uncover their head.
Mm.
At least in Europe. Like, you get, people get nasty if you cover your head in a church in Europe. So I get really confused because, like, for me, the instinct is, okay, show pro. Like, I always have that instinct. If I go to a church or any holy place, I feel like, okay, I have to act accordingly because it's instilled.
Right.
But Ahmed, what about you? How do you feel like when you go into holy places? So not only in mosques, but perhaps a synagogue or a church?
I don't know. I suppose I have a similar feeling, but not to such a great degree. Because I always went to, like, you know, the mosque in my hometown, which is like this kind of small place in like surrounded by farming fields and stuff.
Okay, so sorry, one more. We have to kind of go back because we all know you, but they don't know you. So where are you from?
Yeah, sorry. What is your background? Let me give some details to that. Yeah, so I'm, so obviously from my how I speak, I'm American. I grew up in the Northwest, basically in a really small college town surrounded by farming country.
A small what town?
Small town. Like a very, very small college.
College.
Town. Yeah. So basically, when all the students left to go back home, the population like dropped. So it was like a ghost town. Like that's really how small it was. And it's bigger now, but back then it was really tiny. So I grew up with a lot of like discrimination and such. And we had a mosque there. But like the weird thing was is that our mosque had sort of like 80% college students. So the Sunday school we had, so in Islam, it's actually Fridays is the day for prayer. But because we're in America, it's Sundays because Sundays is a weekend. And so basically at Sunday school, all my teachers were basically from all over the Middle East. And there's this interesting thing about Islam. So this is really kind of going long. Okay, so.
He just like sat down and repositioned.
We're doing this.
So Ahmed is getting serious.
Yeah. So I'm not going to dive into too much detail. Consider like Islam is sort of like an onion.
So are you Shrek now? Are we doing Shrek?
Fuck, I don't know. Right, maybe
Islam onions is like an have onion. Layers.
Islam has layers. Yeah, Islam is like an onion. Okay, so you have there's multiple levels to the religion itself because Islam itself was sort of like it came about during Now, the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, you know, see him saying still, he was a sort of like tribal. So basically all these different tribes in the Middle East. And so when he brought them together, you know, basically have to use, you know, he found the word of God after going from a cave and having experience. And so he sort of brought this word to them as a way to live their life. And so basically what that meant is that they had a set of rules in order how to live their life. But Islam is actually sort of very much concentrated on this thing called the Ummah, which is the community. And so basically, when the community prospers, you know, because it was a religion. And so that's why sort of Islam sort of actually isn't so much just a faith, but it's actually like a set of ways to live your life, which becomes a form of government. And that's why they had the caliph.
Question.
Yeah.
To me, that sounds like Islam and communism should be kind of compatible.
I wouldn't know, but possibly. Like, maybe.
Okay, sorry. Just go on.
Yeah, so basically, what you ended up with, like, you know, sort of like Islam sort of growing and growing and growing, where just like, you know, in the golden age, it spanned, you know, from the Middle East, you know, out, you know, all the way to like Spain and past. Mm. Like, it just controlled these huge, like, basically continents.
Actually. And let us state, when they were in the caliphate in Spain, those were golden days. Those were days where Jews, Christians, and Muslims all lived together in actual harmony. That is.
Oh, yeah.
Also, there's still a lot of kind of common vocabulary between Arabic and Spanish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it's like 10% maybe, maybe more of Arabic kind of origin.
Yeah, there's a lot of overlap. Because like during the Golden Age, that's when like science, art, and music, and it all kind of prospered.
But also coming back to the really quick, the link between all three, so Judaism, Christianity, and all its forms, and Islam. Can you guys elaborate the link for those that don't know?
Abraham.
Basically,
and not Abraham Lincoln.
In Islam, how they tell it in the Quran is basically that basically each people got their prophet. You know, so the Jews got Abraham, the Christians.
No, ours is as basic. We have Moses.
Moses. Yeah,
you have Jesus, and you have Muhammad.
Yeah, we have Muhammad. Peace be upon him. I'm sorry.
Okay, guys, quick question: who's the best?
Oh, wow! The fun thing about Islam is they recognize all the religions, but they basically say that ours is the best.
It's funny because Christians kind of say the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. So weird. We're all like, so weird. We're the OGs. We have no idea what you're talking about.
And that's what I wanted to kind of address as kind of a context, that correct me if I'm wrong, but if I got my history class back in my head, that both Christianity and Islam originally come from Judaism.
Yeah, and everybody should acknowledge this common origin, but seems like people tend to forget.
In Islam, Christians and Jews are called people of the book.
Yeah,
that's a very, very central and important thing that often in I can only recommend to, if you're critical of religion of any kind, read the Old Testament, read the New Testament, and read the Quran. In all three books, there's actually very intelligent things. And
the Old Testament is also the...
The Old Testament is the Torah, is the holy book of the Jews. The Christians have the Bible, which is the Old Testament and the New Testament. And the Quran is...
is a whole different thing.
Well, it's not.
It's very much like sort of a collection of all of them. There's this weird thing where like the prophet, when he first like sort of created, had his whole people, you know, leading to the Holy Land. They actually were sort of kicked out of Medina, and they actually took refuge with the Jews, because they basically took them in, you know, because like we're still part of the same people. But the Jews sort of gave him shit of like, hey, you guys have no people. You're kind of like off on your own. And so then the prophet sort of like gave him the bird, turned around, and started praying.
Yes. I mean, but that sounds like a very Jewish thing to do, actually. I'm not surprised. I'm really not surprised.
Can we go back to, because I find myself as the kind of like atheist agnostic here moderating.
I'm loving that. I'm
also the only woman, but.
Should I get back to what I was saying?
Before? Oh, yes.
American,
yes. Also, looks-wise, we have to, I have to say, right now this show is three blacks and a Jew.
And we kind of a little, I think we should also give a little bit of context to your specific type of blackness.
Yeah, so I'm first generation American. Both of my parents are from Sudan. And so that basically they moved to the States and I was born. So I was basically born and raised in America with two parents who, when I was growing up, were very, very religious and very, very Muslim.
And because it's the U.S. specifically, can we get like a generalized time period of when they moved and when you were born?
That's... Yeah. So they moved to the States in the 1970s, and I was born in the late 1980s.
So generally more tolerant times than 2001 post.
Kind of.
Yeah, kind of.
Kind of. Because the thing is, I grew up in like farming country.
Oh, that's true.
So basically I grew up with like hicks, country folks, farmers, and bumpkins. White trash.
Yes! Someone said it. Thank you, Jesus. It wasn't me. See, Mom, it wasn't me.
I love the and pumpkins. But you also mentioned that normally the holy day would be Friday, but then since you're in the U.S., you just kind of pass this off as like, oh yeah, since it's the U.S., it's on Sundays.
Well, how
do your parents feel about
that? They still have the Friday prayer in America. It's just basically everybody, you know, kind of goes there during lunchtime for the Friday prayer. Mm-hmm. They spend some time together. But when it comes to the kids actually learning, mm-hmm. so in the you know, Arab countries, Sudan, blah blah blah, it's always Friday, mm-hmm. because that's not a work day.
Right.
So all the kids basically go to do the religious studies there, or actually in the general school where they have religious studies. In the States, because we don't really have religious studies because of the separation of church and state, it's basically the kids.
Allegedly.
Oh, allegedly.
I'm trying here.
Oh god,
yeah. Yeah, that's a whole fucked up thing.
Yeah, that's...
Red Scare, fuck that shit. So if you're to get the kids to sort of actually be able to do the whole religious schooling and stuff, they just take Sunday because Christians also have Sundays, you know, for like schooling and stuff.
So kind of adopting to the dominant cultural
religious
to
the Sunday
norms.
School.
Very much.
Yeah.
Very much so.
And also because, okay, so Vincent, you're Catholic, which is like a subcategory of Christianity.
Yeah. Or as Catholics would say, it's Christianity. It's Christianity.
And I think as a lot of non-Christians, that's what we mostly think about. We tend to forget, like, sometimes Protestants, we tend to forget the Orthodox and whatnot. Nathan, you are what, secular liberal?
Actually,
Nathan's starting beatboxing.
You do not want to say Jew beef. Yeah, exactly. That's what a Jew beatboxing
looks
like.
The reason I ask is because as a non-community member,
yeah.
So not me necessarily because I was raised, right? But, because I grew up around a lot of Muslims, a lot of Jews, a lot of Christians. I was deeply exposed to very religious people at an early age, even though my family particularly isn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like as a non-religious person or non-religious people oftentimes see these three major religions as just these very big globs where there's no nuances within them. And that's why I ask.
Yeah, I mean, right. In every religion, you have... tons of shades, like it's a spectrum. It's not one it's not one monolithic thing. In Christianity, you have all these different shades. You have Catholicism, Protestantism, you have Orthodox, Greek and Russian Orthodox, those are two very different things. All these things in Islam, you have Shiites,
Sunni, Kurdites. Yeah. There's a lot of sects. Wahhabism is another one that Saudi Arabia is kind of promoting, and it's kind of fucked up.
There's tons, and even in Judaism, you have the liberals, you have the progressives, you have the humanists, you have the Orthodox, you have,
and then there's even the
conservatives.
I'm sure you heard about this.
Jews for Jesus.
When yes, exactly.
Yes, they exist.
So basically, when there was the attack on the synagogue 2 months ago, 3 months ago.
Yeah.
Mike Pence basically chose Jew for Jesus to hold the sermon.
Yes, because Mike Pence is a dickwad. And yes, sorry, I just had to.
And
say
basically,
that.
Those are Jews that accept Jesus as a prophet.
I mean, I'm calling Jews for Jesus.
They're Christians.
Yeah,
that claim to be Jews.
I mean, the thing, about Judaism and Christianity and Islam is, if you look at when and how these religions started, there was a really, really, really interesting period, a couple of hundred years after the Roman Empire fell, mm-hmm. where the separation between Judaism and Christianity wasn't that big. Mm-hmm. It was basically religious scholars. Just you had these two slight same but different camps just mm-hmm. talking about slight differences in philosophy, mm-hmm. and this gulf just gradually expanded. But in the beginning, like even 300 years after Christ, Judaism and Christianity were very, very, very similar. Mm-hmm. And it took a while.
Well, Jesus was
a
Jew.
And only 300 years later, yeah, Jesus was a
Jesus
Jew.
Jesus is a Jew.
Jesus is a Jew, yeah. Uh-huh. only 300 years later, the prophet of Islam comes around. Mm-hmm. And Islam wasn't created that much later than Christianity. Like, concept. And it's very, very interesting. Just those first 700, 800 years after the Roman Empire, after Christ. Mm-hmm. It's actually after the Roman Empire fell around 600, that's when you had a really interesting time in religion where all these religions were kind of like freestyling it.
Hence your beatboxing.
Hence my beatboxing. No, seriously, you had Jews who tried to who saw this new religion, Christianity, and they tried to distance themselves from it, and got very very serious in how certain things have to be interpreted. Before that, they were like, yeah, whatever, we're all Jews, it's all fine. But at this point, you had this sect that saw things differently. So the OG Jews said, no, we have to be very...
I love that you're doing air OG quotes because nobody can see them.
And you can hear those air quotes, I think. Anyway, these quote unquote OG Jews tried to enforce this break between themselves and these new Jews.
Because Christians
in the beginning did not see themselves as a different religion. Mm. They saw themselves as Jews. Mm. Just, you know, the Messiah had come.
Right.
That was the only difference. Mm-hmm. There were Jews who believed the Messiah had come and Jews who believed that dude wasn't the Messiah. That was the difference. And then you had these other dudes.
The best dudes.
the best dudes. There's a really, really good book.
Nathan just got up to go find a book.
He's looking. He's...
Okay.
We're taking this very seriously.
This is practice. Wow. You know where it was.
Yes.
No. Like 15 minutes ago, I looked at the bookshelf and I was like, I can't see the book anywhere. Mm-hmm. So it must be behind that picture.
You didn't rehearse this at all.
All right.
Anyway, there's this really awesome book that I would recommend for anyone. If you want to know about about how this interplay between Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. There's this awesome book by this guy called Tom Holland. It's not the dude who plays Spider-Man. Same name, Tom Holland. He wrote this book called In the Shadow of the Sword, The Birth of Islam and the Rise of the Global Arab Empire. It's a really, really good book. And it goes into how you have this interplay between religions. So if that interests you, read it.
I have one question. Is the moderator here? So, Vincent, you grew up in Germany, where you have mostly, like, the overwhelming majority of people, whether they're practicing or not, are Catholic and or Protestant.
Well, yes. I mean, I still grew up a minority.
But not religiously.
No. Yes, I did.
Oh, shit.
Yes, because I grew up in Protestant Prussia, so...
And you were Catholic in Prussia.
I was Catholic, right?
Okay.
So I was the only Catholic in town.
Yeah, but it was still Christian. So let's just
no. Right. That is a huge difference.
It's really not, but it is.
But it is. I mean, people do treat you like objectively. It really isn't. Yeah. But Protestants treat like in Protestant Prussia, Catholics are the weird ones. In Bavaria, if you're Protestant, you're weird.
I know, but it's so, as a non-religious person, I always find it so ridiculous. Like, y'all believe in the same God, what's your problem? Like, stop picking on each other. But anyways, that wasn't my question.
I mean, yes.
It's different shades of the same God.
Yeah.
It's sort of like a different, like, rule set of how to lead a life that's holy.
Anywho, that was not my question. No,
but for example, the main... kind of point of connection between Protestants and Catholics is how sins can be forgiven. So Catholics would say sins can only be forgiven through a representative of God, i.e. a priest. And Protestants would say that sins can be forgiven by God himself. So that would mean you don't have to do
penance.
Thank you.
You're welcome. As a Jew, I know everything about guilt. Not because of religion, but because of my mother. Or in my specific case, my dad. My dad is my Jewish mother, but that's...
Okay.
We all probably grew up with a lot of guilt. Anywho, what I was going to ask is, okay, but Protestant or Christian or Catholic or whatever, you still grew up Christian in a predominantly Christian society.
Yes.
Whereas Nathan, as a German Jew, and Ahmed, as a Muslim American, you both grew up in dominant Christian societies, but you were the religious minorities.
Yes.
And I was wondering, like, how is that? Also, Ahmed, if you can, like, kind of sort of, like, take away your race for a second, just in, from a religious perspective, if you can at all take it away.
I can try.
We'd be colorblind for this.
Honestly, yeah, that's an interesting challenge to pose. I mean,
especially because intersectionality.
Yeah,
but not,
yeah.
Because like for me, it's sort of like the whole thing I was saying. Like the whole onion thing. Right, sort of sum it up is basically like you had these, you know, like the command, the rules set, you know, like basically like the whole. There's actually a form of government for Islam. You have Islamic governments. So basically, when I was growing up, I was sort of like in the Sunday school. We had people who were all college students from all over the world. Mm. And because of the whole thing with, you know, like Islam's way of living with governments and stuff, you end up with sort of like this drift where each culture sort of ends up with their own different rule set. Mm. So I was grew up with the whole, it's like basically like each teacher told me different stories or ways of like, there's a lot of conflicting information. Like in Islam, no joke, there is a story about a giant goat that gives people milk. And in this story, people get greedy and kill the goat. And this one of my teachers was dead serious that it was a true story.
I mean,
come on. Each of our religions has, I mean,
talking bushes.
Yes, burning bushes that pop. There's a fantasy writer who actually incorporated that into. He rewrote the story of Troy, and Troy and the historical Moses happened roughly at the same time. Oh. So he managed to get Moses into the siege of Troy, and his Moses in that book
actually was high on some sort of opiates and saw bush burn.
But you
and
know,
it's amazing. It's a great book.
But to me, it always seems... So I mean this very seriously and not just to like kind of protect myself, but I mean this very seriously. Like, yes, everyone... I suppose that a lot of people believe that the stories they grew up hearing or being taught in their respective religions, even though they may seem a bit absurd or fantastical, are true. Again, as a non-religious person, though, I'm like, that's a bunch of old men who were high.
It's
a possibility.
I mean, cool. You had a bunch of mushrooms and wrote a really cool story.
Honestly, I think it's a combination of both. I think it's a bunch of smart old men that were high.
Yeah. So for example, the story that Christians would know is Genesis, mm-hmm. would be when Jews were in Babylonia.
Oh, right? Genesis, I think Genesis is the creation of the world. You have Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numeri, and Deuteronomy. Right?
So, well done.
So,
but anyways, so the way that I was told, taught the story was, that at some point, Jews started kind of drifting away from their religion, so they decided to have a new kind of...
The golden calf. Is that what you're talking about? The golden calf?
No, that was during
After Egypt.
No, I was talking about the actual story behind the creation myth.
Oh, behind the creation. Okay.
And that was supposedly because Jews started drifting away from the community, and so in order to kind of get everyone back, they decided to write down the story of how the world came about.
Yeah, a bunch of people were
right. I mean,
I have to...
We have a laptop here, so yeah, I can fact-check.
I think that's a difficult thing to fact-check, because the funny thing about the Torah is that I'm going to, instead of comparing it to Star Wars, I'm going to compare it to Lord of the Rings.
Diversity.
Yes.
I'm going to time you. You have 1 minute. Let's go.
It's always 2 minutes.
Two. Let's go.
Basically, one rule in writing, in any writing, is every writer steals. You cannot be original. Everything has been written before. The Lord of the Rings, the name Gimli comes from the Edda, which is the Old Norse sagas. Mm-hmm. What I'm getting at is that the Torah stole heavily from old Babylonian traditions. There is the Gilgamesh mm-hmm. epic, which is the oldest written down epic that we have. We found it, archaeologists found it in cuneiform script on rock. That's where they found this epic. And this epic deals with an old man who survives a 40-day flood and builds a ship. And this epic predates the Torah by a couple of hundred or thousand, but by a long time. So basically, what Jews did is they took that Gilgamesh epic and incorporated it, took that and basically plagiarized a whole section of it and put it in the Bible. Mm-hmm. That's what they did.
Cultural appropriation.
But that, if you look at it, I mean, we're talking about Babylon.
Yeah.
It's the same rough area where this tribe was running around anyway. So you just take myths that fly around anyway and incorporate them. If you look,
Christianity did that with the whole Easter business, didn't it?
Everything.
Everything. The Christmas tree. The Christmas tree is not a Christian thing. They took a pagan symbol and just said, it works. Let's just use it.
Vincent has his eyes wide open, his mouth hanging open, like, damn.
No, especially, so that's something for the Germans out there. Because in German, it's not the, it's not anymore the Christmas tree. It's the, It is
Germans say Christbaum.
They used to say Christbaum, but now it's Weihnachtsbaum.
Yeah,
because of American cultural imperialism.
No, because of Hitler.
Did that come in?
This is the first time we actually had the word Hitler.
Exactly, all of us.
No, because actually the what happened so. Jewish friend of mine actually told me about this the first time, and I was like, no, I don't believe you. But I looked it up, and this actually seems to be true. Since
the Nazis and religion didn't quite get along because they were kind of trying to occupy the same space to some extent. The Nazis were pretty good at kind of pushing the churches kind of out of the common life of
the just out of the cultural space, make space for fascism. We can't have religion
occupied. And they still wanted to keep a certain kind of festivity
traditions
and some traditions. So that's why Christmas, which up until then was definitely a Christian holiday, became a lot more secular. So that's why, for example, it wasn't anymore the Christkind, which especially in southern Germany is still pretty common.
It's still, I mean, the Christkind in especially in Bavaria is a very big thing.
Right. Like a but then for ghost? Example, yeah,
I never understood the whole thing with the Christkind as a Jew, but
it sounds like. Yeah, Christkind. Have you heard of this, Ahmed?
Basically,
super creepy to me.
Basically, baby Jesus enters your house and gives you presents.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Santa Claus business is creepy too.
Honestly, baby Jesus giving you presents is a bit less creepy than an old bearded man coming out of
the chimney. Both are creepy.
At least it's cute.
No, because with old Santa Claus, it's like a pedophile.
And a lot less frightening. I don't know.
With Christkind, it's like the Sixth Sense. You know,
yeah.
Reminds me of that shit.
Every folk
that's true.
I see presents like this.
But I gotta say,
but anyways, just Google Nazis and Weihnachten or Nazis and Christmas, and there's a bunch of stuff that changed. So, for example, the name of the
trees. No, but I believe that. I mean,
there's of course then the having less focus on Christ around Christmas, and I mean, also the whole gift giving. Of course, that is also. Strongly influenced by then American
American commercialism.
Yeah.
I call it cultural imperialism, but you know, tomato, tomato.
Yeah, but one of my favorite things about Germany and Christmas is Krampus.
Like, but that's Germany. That's Bavaria and Austria.
Or Bavaria. It's so fucking creepy, but I love it.
Okay, what is Krampus? Because I've been here forever. I've heard it. No, I've heard of it, but I don't know
what
it is.
It's like this monster that has like chains.
Punishes
the bad children.
Here's the fun thing about Krampus. In this podcast, I don't think any of us here are qualified to actually talk about Krampus.
I mean, we had Knecht Ruprecht.
Yeah, but so, Krampus is something very different. Krampus is a fucking monster.
I love it so much.
Yeah, we will Google it. We will ask an actual Bavarian and get back to this.
I mean, the same idea, the same mindset, the same culture that came up with Krampus came up with Struwwelpeter. It's the same. I don't know if you guys are familiar with... Ahmed, do you know what Struwwelpeter is?
Not a clue.
We have to introduce you to Struwwelpeter. It's a fucked up comic book that
basically
I personally was raised on.
Yeah.
Yes.
Me too. I mean, basically, German kid stories are
violent
and amazing.
Violent.
They are so violent. And
okay.
They scar your mind.
Weirdly disturbing.
So keep everyone alone. Yeah. But coming back also to like the original question though, because
I have one more thing.
Because
there's also Schwarze Piet.
Oh yes,
yeah,
Schwarze Piet. That's so great.
Exactly. So he's basically the Dutch.
Who is ever's listening? Ezzy's expression right now is the best.
You never look. You never heard of Schwarze Piet?
I have, and then he said like it's the best thing. I'm looking like,
damn. I mean, okay.
I mean, it's like it's not like a, you know, like it's.
Anyways,
it's fucked up.
Schwarze Piet is basically the Dutch version of Krampus or Knecht Ruprecht, and I mean, he's just the black servant of
black servant. Like, oh, it's so cool.
Of Santa Claus. And there's huge rows happening in the Netherlands for the last, I don't know, 5 to 10, 15 years, maybe, where people on the one hand are saying, oh, well, maybe we shouldn't have a black servant of white Santa. And then other people are saying, no, it's our tradition. Let's keep it. It's amazing. Just like
Ahmed.
Black American.
So, for clarity, I find Schwarze Piet hilariously offensive. That's what it's totally not okay.
Okay, but like, what? How hilarious is it? Are we talking like minstrelly offensive or Uncle Tom offensive or like what's that guy from the Trump administration, Ben Carson offensive? Like. Ooh. What level of offensive?
I feel like Uncle Tom.
Yeah,
Uncle Tom
see, Ken. And that hence my reaction to be like, oh, it's so cool. I'm like, what?
No, it's just like, I just find it so fucked up that in modern day, people still have this thing. Mm. Like, but at the same time, I just find it, it's like, for me, it's amusing. Because I grew up like, I basically grew up with like racism. Like, I didn't actually recognize racism until I was like in college because of how pervasive it was.
So every day that it was just like normal.
I was constantly experiencing it. And yeah. So that's why it's just frosty. That's why I find it hilarious because my sense of humor and recognition of racism is just so twisted that I'm just like, this is really bad. But I find it really funny that people still say, is it okay?
Oh, Jesus. I mean, and it's perfect, but it's also so terrible.
Yes.
Okay, but that brings you back to like how you see now. I'm bringing it back. Brings you back to how you grew up. Again, to both of you, but maybe we'll go over Ahmed first since you're our guest. So, how is it growing up as a religious minority in a Christian-dominated country? And I'm also talking like if we can kind of take away that. Post 9/11, like terrorist paranoia.
Yeah. So it was kind of weird. So, as I grew up, you know, parents were like very much super, super religious, and you know, we do the fasting for Eid, you know, because you have Eid twice, Eid al-Fitr and Eid al-Adha. And I also
What is that?
So Eid al-Adha, which is like the celebration of like. Sacrifice, yes. And I thought it was feasting.
You're
totally different ones. Once I'm not gonna go into them because I'm not qualified to actually.
No. But, okay, but normally this is my job to murmur. So.
Speak clearly and
yes. Yeah. So, but basically, there's two celebrations in Islam, two big ones, and they follow Islam follows the lunar calendar, which means every year it's on a different day, which confuses the crap out of people who I was going to school with when I was growing up.
I mean, we have the same thing in Judaism. I mean, Judaism is now in the year 5,700 something, because Jews count from the creation of the world, and the world was created roughly 6,000 years ago.
Of course,
as we all know.
Also, so our holidays are always like by the regular calendar every year on a different day.
Yeah,
it's confusing.
But yeah. So it means like Ramadan one month is in May, and the next month it is.
Yeah, it could be in August.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm confused. Why is it not moving in either?
No, that's an excursion.
Or no. Either forward or backward in the year. So if the year is shorter,
I am not qualified to answer
how
that.
How does that work? That has always confounded me about
Google it,
about
please.
Lunar if calendars.
In the break, we're going to take a break in about soon-ish. 15 minutes.
Yeah,
I need a refill.
We need more booze.
But let's get back to the whole.
Yes.
I really want this question answered.
Yes.
Okay. So basically, for me, it's like growing up. You know, the big celebration is always Eid. That you always have a month of fasting before that. And so, for the people who are not aware of that, basically means we would fast during the day. So that means I would have to get up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, eat a bowl of cereal, and then spend the entire day not eating anything, you know, still hanging out with my peers, going to lunch, sitting next to them, you know, eating pizza,
going to
yogurt. Yeah, going to PE, everything.
So PE is a sport?
Yes. Physical education.
Sport, you know, you're running around, basketball, dodgeball, whatever.
All on one bowl of cereal in the morning.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then in the evening, after the sun sets, so the race goes from sunrise to sunset. As soon as the sun sets, then you you just feast. And so you usually go to the mosque where everybody brings food and there's like a big thing where they sit down, eat together and talk together and stuff.
That sounds kind of amazing.
Yeah. Mm. So when you're in Sudan, this basically means that when you break fast, people would actually just put out rugs in the street and they just have food out there.
Mm.
And
anybody so cool.
could actually That's come really there, cool. sit down, and take part. You know, you walk down, you sit, you talk with people. So you basically get sort of socialized with your neighbors. And it's really beautiful out there. Now, in America, on the other hand, I get really confused with looks. And people are like, why are you not eating? I'm like, I'm fasting. Why are you fasting? Because Ramadan. What's Ramadan? Why do you guys do this? I'm like, oh my God, just let me, I'm exhausted. Shut up.
Google it, motherfuckers.
And especially because we get extra irritated because you only have one bowl of cereal.
Yes, exactly.
Fun little tidbit. That's also how my dad fasts.
Okay.
So he actually just eats
some... Your dad
some...
is very Catholic, which is...
Yeah, he's super Catholic.
And also, but it's very specific kind of Catholic, colonized Catholic. That's an entire different ballgame.
Something we can... That's another kind of word. we can talk about that later. Basically, he doesn't eat between, I think it's 9 and 9. So he just doesn't eat while the sun is up, and then in the night once the sun
is up. But only not every day, on specific holidays, right?
Basically.
Okay.
It's like whenever you need a fast.
But what I'm hearing out from you, Ahmed, I'm hearing a lot of ignorance, a lot of like questions that, especially in this day and age, could be easily Googleable.
Yeah, but this is like back when I was a kid, you know, you didn't really have internet. You had like the best you had was like dial-up internet and Yahoo.
Or a library.
Yeah.
Okay, it's how many people go to libraries though? I mean, basically, but how? I mean, people basically ask you, okay, you why aren't you eating? But did it feel hostile or curious to you?
It was mostly curious, but there's a lot of ignorance. So there's this. So I'm going to get a little preachy right now.
Yeah.
So there's not so much religious. Basically, there's actually this huge thing in the 90s where there was the huge, like, you know, Feed Africa campaign. You know, the
skinny black kid with the fly on their eye.
Yes.
Like,
and be like, call now to donate and feed this child. You have this kid who's standing in dirt, you know, covered in dirt and like rags, like flies in his face, you know, just staring into the camera looking sad and cute and adorable. And like, call now to donate us and save this child. Like, so that had an incredibly negative impact on the world's perception of Africa that still lasts to this day.
Yeah,
it does.
These ads, they haven't stopped. That's the thing. They're still running these today.
Oh, okay, in this group, I'm probably the only one, I hope I'm the only one, who got the eat up your food. Think of the poor kids in Africa.
Oh, no, I get this.
You got, got that?
No. I got it. Difference is, my parents would say, eat up, because your cousin's in Sudan.
Oh, God, that's even worse.
No. Oh, yeah.
Because that's, you have a real connection to your cousins. I mean,
oh, yeah.
It's like, eat up, think of your cousins in Sudan. That's like the worst version of this.
Oh, yeah. So the thing is, also in Sudan, in the 90s, they had this huge crisis, because they just basically, agriculture industry collapsed. And there's a lot of huge issues like starvation and poverty in Sudan. So every time my parents would go to Sudan, or they knew somebody going, they would just send them like suitcases packed with food. So we were like very, very much aware of how much people in Sudan were suffering. So my parents say that it's a whole nother level of fucked up.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, because like white charity. So what Ahmed and I are kind of half giggling, half enraged about, that's an entirely different episode.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like, so to kind of get back to the whole thing about when I was a little kid, it's so when I would talk about Sudan and stuff, all my friends. So when I went to Sudan for 3 months when I was, I don't know, 7 or something, and I was talking about it to my classmates, because I went there in like April, May, so I actually missed like a month and a half of school, and all my cousins were, or not my cousins, my classmates were always just like, well, you know, are you just gonna like live in like mud huts, you know, with like no electricity? Yeah. And I'm like, we have that. Like, you know, in my parents' village, there was like one phone, but still, you know, they had a phone.
But the stereotypes regarding Africa, like people, I remember growing up and people asking me, like, does my dad like hunt lions and whatnot?
Yeah, exactly. It was the exact same
thing. Honestly, also, if your dad hunted lions, that'd be fucking cool.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, it's just so perverse, because in the end, our society, or European or Western societies, are very much to blame for how the economic situation is.
Yeah, because hundreds of years of economic and physical and God knows what exploitation will do that to a country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I think we kind of failed at keeping the racism out.
Yeah. But let's not talk about COVID.
Yeah, it's really hard.
As a minority in a Western society,
Western is very Eurocentric, but let's continue.
In the Northern Hemisphere. as minority of African descent, you then are still put in a position where you have to kind of explain that, oh no, they're not savages, or they're not living on living in mud huts, which.
Yeah, like I had one. So in my school, my first grade teacher, she was actually amazing. So she basically traveled all over Africa, and she brought back a lot of things from Africa. And so in her class, she would do like a lot of education about different cultures and countries within Africa, which actually helped quite a bit with that. So all my classmates who like went to her class were sort of had some awareness at least.
And they knew that Africa was a continent and not just one big country.
Exactly.
But that's a continent? That lasted.
So basically for me, like growing up with Islam and stuff, you know, the whole fasting and stuff was a really weird concept to them. But also I didn't actually celebrate any Christian holidays, which was even weirder for them. Because they'd talk about Easter, you know, and like zombie Jesus and stuff. And I'd be like, eggs, awesome.
But funny enough, Jesus. That's something that I got also. But continue your, eventually we'll have to, yeah.
Yeah, I think for me is like, my experience is more so the fact that there was this huge Christian population, like there was this giant mega church in my town. Mm. And so there's a lot of basically a lot of Christian religion celebrations and discussions and stuff that I just didn't take part in. So, and that kind of made me the outsider because we didn't celebrate Christmas growing up. And I was really bitter about that for a really long time. But I'm actually kind of happy I didn't actually celebrate it, because it's kind of gave me some nice perspective about how much bullshit Christmas is. And it's just...
Ooh, we're going to get to that in a second.
Yeah. After the break. Yeah, but so for me, it's like I kind of ended up being sort of like this outsider when it came to people actually taking part in all their celebrations and holidays. Like for me, mostly it was just like a day off from school, if that. Mm-hmm. And also celebrate, you know, singing carols and having musicals, you know, my parents would go to where we just like sing, you know, dashing through the snow and all those beautiful things. And my parents would like take out the camcorder, record it, and then we just go home, you know, and eat pizza or whatever, not talk about whatever it actually meant.
Mm. I had a very similar but different experience as a non-Christian minority in Germany. My mom grew up Christian, she converted. So, the whole thing with not understanding what's going on. I mean, yeah, I get a day off school and whenever they have a holiday, which is awesome. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I have a day off school while you celebrate zombie Jesus.
Yeah, like winter is basically Christmas, Hanukkah,
Shabbat. So did you just kind of get a day off on Fridays or?
Shabbat starts when the sun goes down.
On Friday. So
Friday evening.
Right. Because, we have one colleague and she basically just leaves a bit early on Fridays.
So yeah, because you have to stop.
I mean, you have to get to the center.
You have to stop. I mean, especially in winter. Shabbat starts when the sun goes down. Mm-hmm. In winter, that's really early.
Right. And you have to get everything done, all the cooking and da-da-da, whatnot.
Depending on how religious you are, yes. Yeah. I mean, liberal Jews are basically like, Orthodox Jews. Technology is a huge boon for Jews.
Wait, so what happens to an Orthodox Jew if they're stuck on the U-Bahn when the sun goes down? Like, do they just ride at the end of the line and back at the
They won't get stuck on the U-Bahn because they take precautions.
Is it like bring like a tender with them to open the doors for them?
Riding on the U-Bahn does not work. There is this concept.
But you have to open doors.
If a non-Jew...
A goy.
That's a goy.
Let me tell that. So the word goy...
Really weird look.
For listeners, the word goy means non-Jew. So rich Jews have this concept of they have goyish servants that can light fires for them. Because then they're not working. The goys are working.
Right.
Oh, God.
I think just to be fair, we need to talk about some big crazy Christian and Muslim stories as well later.
Well, after the break. After the break.
But let me quickly go into this. The whole...
Yeah.
There's this cliche that a lot of Jews are lawyers. That cliche is true for a very simple reason. There's this mitzvah in Judaism. Mitzvah means duty, something you have to do, which is read the Torah. Mm. Read it, understand it, but also look at it with a critical eye. Mm-hmm. And that's what Jews have been doing for 4,000 years. So they found loopholes. It's part of Judaism to look at the law, the religious law that God handed down, and think about, now how can I get around that?
So if you're and from a childhood trained in that way of thinking.
Exactly. Then... The critical thinking of reading a text, taking it at face value, and then finding loopholes mm-hmm. is the perfect training for any lawyer. That's so true. Jews, just by their upbringing, are naturally predisposed to become lawyers.
And there is a whole industry producing devices for Orthodox Jews.
Yes. Yes. But the whole, but the whole lawyer thing. I think the whole critical thinking about the Word of God is also something that's very prevalent in Islam, I think. Oh, or yeah. It used to, at least I know it used to be, maybe not anymore these days, but I know that in Islam the critical thinking about the Word of God is Ezzy wants to say something.
There's also motion sensors, so you yes, yeah. don't need to turn on the lights.
I mean, that's a very yeah. Orthodox Jews love motion sensors.
Yeah. But there's one thing that I did want to talk about before we actually hit the break, because we're kind of sort of nearing the end.
We should take a break.
Okay, so we've talked about Judaism, we've talked about Islam, we've talked about Christianity,
Catholicism, whatever.
We haven't talked about one like kind of sort of unifying factor of Nullius Force 4. It's like atheism, and I say that in air quotes.
I mean, atheism is not...
It's not a religion.
That is not a religion, but I said unifying factor.
A lot of hardcore atheists actually exhibit telltale signs of religious fanatics.
Yes. So much.
That is... But let's say... Okay, let's talk about atheism... After the break, we all need a break. We need to refill our cups. I need some more mead. You need some Glühwein, I guess. And then we'll come back.
Yes.
All right. Then, ladies and gentlemen, this was the first part of Three Negroes. We are Hello. Joined by Ahmed, our friend.
Sorry.
Let me try with my
quotation marks. Friend.
Let's do a take two on that.
No.
We don't do a second take.
All right. Anyways, as you can tell, the guys are getting me a little bit
well,
drunk.
Well, actually, Ezzy, how do you know Ahmed? Or Ahmed, how do you know Ezzy?
Theater.
Yeah, she begged me to audition for her play.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you, Robin. Audition for her play. No, really, yeah, that's what happened. So.
You're like, we're waiting outside of the theater after performance. You're like, you got to come to the auditions next week. And I was like, all right.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what he did. And that's how we all met.
Yeah, and then the reading, and it was a black character. And I was like, oh, I know what I'm going to be.
Exactly.
The white redneck.
That's exactly the thing. The white redneck.
I mean, you're American, you know, it's not that.
Yeah, it's like a totally, you know, one, two, you know, I basically, you know, I grew up rural America, farming country with rednecks, so she needed somebody who had, you know, the experience and cultural background.
Can you do a hick accent?
I don't. It's really, like, offensive. I was going to say racist, but. I think it's a very offensive one.
Okay, yeah, go on.
I mean, if it's good, go on.
I don't know if I can do it. All right. Well, I feel like I'm building the expectations, so I have to do it anyways.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you see here, everybody, we got to have some nice, you know, redneck accent with our nice little Jewish honky over here, and a couple of these, you know, black folk, you know, doing some Uncle Tom Cabin stuff for me. Yeah, black folk. I'd say something else, but with this redneck accent, I think it might be a bit fucked up.
Oh, bless your little heart. He really did try.
Now, Ezzy, you're basically atheist. your family didn't, like, what, how did you experience religion growing up?
Okay, so as I mentioned in the first part of this episode, I grew up, it had a lot to do with, like, who my parents were friends with, but also just where I grew up with. I was exposed to every major religion, and people who were practicing that religion. Personally, though, so my dad's family are pretty Catholic. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Please elaborate.
kind of what we mentioned earlier, where we were talking about, like, colonized people and Christianity. So my father was from Côte d'Ivoire. You know, the French came and brought Catholicism with them, and that's just that. My mom, on the other hand, she went to a Lutheran high school.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So a subset of Christianity, if you will, but never really religious. I think the most religious person who I grew up in, kind of my closer family, was my grandma, or is my grandma, on my mom's side. Okay, I'm 25 years old, right? And my grandma says a prayer before every meal. Mm-hmm. And in my 25 years, I still have yet to understand that prayer because she says it so quickly, and all I can hear is, da-da-da-da-da, amen. And then we all bow our heads, say amen, and keep going. I have no idea what the woman is saying.
So your grandma never sat you down and said, your grandma had no interest in passing on her religion to you?
No, and I think that's because also my parents, I don't know if a conversation happened between her and my parents, but... because my parents aren't religious, I would argue that they're, you know, in an effort to kind of protect their privacy, I'll only say that they're kind of a little bit, like, spiritual in a way, like, this kind of, just not formally religious. And I think that my grandma...
Do you know whether your parents believe in God?
They don't believe in God.
Okay.
In the sense that, like, kind of you three were raised in. Mm-hmm. They did pass on kind of these teachings of the universe, and then we're all connected, a higher power, if you will.
So they're spiritual.
And that's what I mean with spiritual. Not agnostic. Agnostic, really, the term is so Christianity, Judaism, Islamic based, kind of centered around this one concept of, like, one God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I wouldn't call them agnostic.
Okay.
So they believe in cosmic forces. Is that
but not in
Not New Agey.
Exactly.
But...
not in the hippy dippy sense, but in this really where, like,
there are forces that they can't explain that bind us all. So they're Jedi. I always bring
Why do you always bring it back to Star Wars?
Always Star Wars.
So my mom is definitely listening. Hi, mommy. You hear that? You're a Jedi.
From what I heard about your mom, one scary ass Jedi.
Yes. She puts her Vader to shame.
Does that make her a Sith?
No, scary. Like, she
would be something like
Jedi.
Qui-Gon Jinn.
Yeah. That's
Qui-Gon. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Like, really,
no, Mace Windu.
Mm.
Are they funny? I don't know. Anywho,
Mace Windu is Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh yeah, totally. That's my mom. I love you dearly. Hi.
I think that's a compliment.
Yeah, it really is. Anyway, so yeah, I would say that much. But to them, it's a really private thing, and mm-hmm. that's why I'm also, like, I said that really seriously. Protect their privacy.
Yeah.
They don't go around talking about what they necessarily believe in.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understood, though, on my mother's side, everyone was a lot more religious, and particularly, I think, Lutheran and Baptist, if I'm not mistaken, up until, like, the 1970s or so.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I saw pictures of my family in, like, church hats and whatnot, and they were part of a church community back in the days, in the early days of Detroit.
Isn't, like, church a very important factor in daily African-American life?
Exactly, and that's why... So it's really hard, I think, for me personally as an African American to truly, honestly say that I am atheist.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that, I definitely don't believe in God. I don't believe in one God or multiple gods or some old white guy in the sky. But to be African American, the experience is so coppled, verknüpft,
tethered to
religion.
Mm-hmm.
Simply the act of struggle and holding on to a higher power and the hope that said higher power will, quote unquote, free us.
That sounds so Jewish.
Exactly. There's also a very good passage in Between the Walls and Me, which was a book.
What is Between the Walls and Me?
The yes. World which and is Me by Ta-Nehisi Between the World
and Me? What did I say?
The Walled.
No,
Vincent's had too much to drink. So the between the world
between
and
the
me,
world and me,
by
Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Ta-Nehisi.
Okay.
Coates.
He's like the new James Baldwin, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah.
And basically,
it's a book.
It's a book
about.
Basically, it's a letter that Ta-Nehisi wrote to his son. And then decided to publish.
Genau, pretty much.
That
must have been a long-ass letter.
It was. So I think it's maybe 160-page
Anyway, but your point.
And basically it's about him in experiencing being an African-American man.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of passing the torch to his son.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a couple of passages on religion, because as you pointed out, it is a big part of African-American life to be religious. And that's also probably something that you, Ahmed, will be able to have to say some things about,
yeah,
I guess. And then basically he said to him, being similar to Ezzy in the sense that he also wasn't raised religiously or Christian necessarily, he didn't feel like there was any kind of higher goal to suffering. Because for a lot of people, there is this sense that, oh, well, I mean, we go through hardships during our lives, and then in the end, we're rewarded mm-hmm. by going to heaven because we were such good Christians and we turned the other cheek and we...
But that sounds like that's what slave owners will want their slaves to believe. Like,
well, that's why.
Well, that's exactly why he's bringing it up.
Yeah,
right? Yeah, but that's also in the concepts of like African colonialism. That's mm-hmm. what pisses me off so much about missionaries and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
There's this whole link of exploitation and indoctrination, really, like just fucking up a people on the basis of religion
mm-hmm.
and getting them to believe what you're doing to them is okay because the Lord prescribed it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there's worth in your suffering.
Yeah, which is sorry, but continue.
And speak. Then also with that comes, I mean, it's kind of a tangent, but with that and also comes a rejection of the previous generations. Because if you had the first generation of Christian colonialized Africans, then if they look back on their
it's a way
ancestors that kind of believed in naturalistic religions or something like that, they would then, if you accept Christianity, would be heathens or would be mm-hmm. Would be blaspheme.
Mm-hmm.
And that would then mean that you have to pray for them and you have to deliver them from evil and yada, yada, yada. Bullshit. And that is a very perverse situation that they're being put in.
I mean, it's a smart tool to take just... from a very outside objective,
mm-hmm. yeah.
as slavers, it's a smart. Very smart tool.
Totally.
Take them out of their country and then give them a reason to divorce themselves from their heritage.
Yeah.
But we're also for me, I straddle these two distinct kind of ways. On the one hand, you know, my father was still born into French colonialism.
Mm-hmm.
So in that also religious context of Catholicism,
mm-hmm.
there's that kind of link to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the African-American experience of, you know, dragging people away, enslaving people, and then putting Christianity on them. And now also like hundreds of years since.
Question for you. When you say you feel like you... not 100% atheist. When was the last time you were in church?
I'm in church on a regular basis because I have art history as a minor. I'm actually really...
Attending a service.
Okay, attending a service.
And what does it... like, what does it mean or not mean to you? Like, what do you feel when you... because we've talked about how each of us... like, how Ahmed, how Vincent, and how I feel when we go to a... holy place, a house of God.
Yeah.
Like we all have this feeling of reverence. It's just instilled into us.
Yeah.
So when we attend a service, I think it doesn't matter if it's a Christian service or
exactly.
We
You just kind of
feel,
we adapt.
I think.
And what is it like
so
for you?
So outside the context of like a funeral or wedding, the last time I attended like at least a Christian service was like a good decade or so ago. Like a friend invited me who was kind of she was Catholic, and I went. And I as a theater person, I can appreciate the performative context.
Mm-hmm.
The pageantry.
Like, yeah, the pageantry of it.
Sense of patronizing.
No, I don't. But it's really the rituals of it and whatnot.
I don't believe any of it, but I do like the performance.
But
good voice, Pastor, good voice.
But for me, it's always, and I speak very personally, for me, it's very difficult to divorce my politics
mm-hmm.
from Christianity specifically.
What does that mean?
By that, I mean colonialism and, you know, just using in the context of that. African American people, and also the Caribbean and South America, and generally black people on the Western side of the world, to justify the enslavement of them on the basis of religious grounds.
Okay, so basically, in your mind, you, like, even if it's just in a small way, you equate religion, especially Christianity, with oppression.
Yeah, and just the blind following of oppression.
Mm-hmm.
The trying to wrap a nice bow around slavery and colonialism, which is really just economics. Mm. You know, trying to justify it with that. Matter as much as I can respect someone's religion, be it because I'm viewing it or I'm reading about it or whatever, it's always in the back of my mind, especially regarding Christianity.
So, but
especially because you can just kind of go to the church and kind of get rid of your sins. So even if you are a terrible slave owner, mm-hmm. then you can still be a good Christian.
You can still be a good Christian, exactly. Yeah. But okay, so coming back though to my family, and why I say I can't in good conscience really call myself an atheist, or even to some extent an agnostic, because for me the term agnosticism has to do so much with like one God gods.
But agnosticism, what agnosticism means is. It's the honest admission of ignorance. Like, you don't know. There might be a God. There might be several gods. You don't know. That's what agnosticism
is. That's what
is.
I say. I know that's what it is, but I'm saying how it feels for me, that term. Mm-hmm.
So
what I mean.
Would you call yourself?
I would say, but hold on before I answer that question. Let me get back to the original. The African-American experience, because it is so linked with Christianity, for better or worse, means that even if you aren't raised formally religious, even if you don't believe in the concept of God or from religion, your language and your music in particular are so steeped in Christianity, you can't really get away with it.
Yeah.
I don't just say, oh, Jesus, all the time simply because I'm an American. It's just also a very African-American.
No, you can say it because you're African-American.
You know,
right? So...
And then you, Ahmed, is a literal African-American.
I find that really weird.
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's because so I kind of get that. So because when I was growing up, because I went to like of course I was raised Muslim, but also on my own for fun, I have a really weird sense of fun. I suppose I would go to religious services of other religions. Mm. Like I went to Catholic ones, of course. I went to that big mega church I mentioned before. You know, it's like
talk about performance,
obscene excess there. I also went to like a Mormon service, and I even actually went to a rock Shabbat.
A rock Shabbat?
Yes, a rock
Shabbat. I want to attend a rock Shabbat.
It was
that
pretty
sounds awesome.
Awesome. It was pretty kick-ass.
Yeah, see, Judaism in the States is so much cooler than Judaism. Rock Shabbat, I want that.
Yeah.
Okay, go on, sorry.
So I totally understand what you're saying. Like, African-Americans, the language of religion is sort of deeply ingrained in it. You know,
you cannot be African-American and not be Christian to some extent.
Yeah.
You really can't.
Yeah, because
except for if you're Ahmed,
who's
African American.
Yeah, but then we have to talk about the term African American, because in the strict sense of the term, you and I both are African American.
Yeah.
You have Sudanese heritage, me have half Iberian heritage.
Yeah, and so I have a huge axe to grind about being called African American.
This
yeah.
is nice.
Yeah.
This is
yes.
Nice.
Now we're getting to the meaty bits.
Okay. So. So basically, there's this whole thing in America when somebody's growing up. You know, it's like. People look at you and like, okay, you're brown or black or whatever, and it's like you're immediately African American. And then you look into actually the culture of like African American or whatever, and then there's black.
Yeah.
And so then it's sort of people look at me and like, oh, you're black. And I'm like, I don't recognize myself as that.
Funny, my dad has the same thing as you.
Yeah, and it's so I've always kind of, so I kind of came with this whole rationalization back when I was in college, which I think is, which I now think is kind of bullshit, but I'm going to describe it. And it's basically that for me, I consider myself Sudanese American, because Africa is a continent with many different countries, and people say African American are ignorant and dumb as fuck. Because it's just like, it's sort of like if I look at Nathan and he goes over there and he's like, oh, you're European American. Like, that's, honestly, that is exactly what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I always say, like, okay, like, at most, I'm Sudanese American. I was born and raised in America, but I would say if you want to talk about my heritage, then it is Sudanese American. African American would be somebody who's like, I can actually trace my roots back to Africa. And then there's African American. And then there's black folk who are just sort of like, you know, my folk came from slavery centuries ago and I don't really know where I'm from, so therefore I'm just black.
Yeah.
So they've lost that connection back to Africa.
Yeah. And there's, like, my brother and I were talking about this last time I was home, we were talking about this because, we grew up with the terms black and African American, but how compared to other black folk that are our peers, he and I were truly African American in that sense, half African, half American. True, not as specific. We could say we're Ivorian American.
Yeah.
But just like, I think that's why the term black tends to feel more comfortable to me also, generally speaking. I'll say African American more in a formal context, or it's more formal to me at least.
Yeah. Cause for me, it's like, I can trace my family, like my parents, but I can say like, both my parents are from Sudan. They both grew up in this village along the Nile. I know how those villages were founded. Like, I can go back to like late 1880s talking about the Mahdist War, you know, that happened in Sudan with the British.
But that's also a luxury you have compared to black people in the US, because we, on average, you hit a wall. You literally hit a wall with the end of slavery, where beforehand your ancestors were listed as cattle. Without names.
Yeah, and the thing that's a huge issue. And in modern day, it's like, it's why you have this whole African American. And actually, there was recently, I think like last couple weeks or so, there was, I can't give you the details. I read it and kind of forgot most of the details. But they had some African American women on a talk show where they had a DNA test done. And one of them got her results back, and she was 25% European.
Yeah.
And it was just like, and it was like the shock and incredibly depressing to her. And there was this whole controversy on Twitter and stuff where there's like, well, what's the big deal? You know, like, why is that a bad thing? And I'm like,
we have a question regarding Twitter, which we'll get to later.
Yeah. But there's this whole controversy around it, because it's basically, it meant that to her, in her ancestors, one of them was raped.
Yeah. That's the reality of it.
Yeah.
And because even one could argue, oh, but, you know, they loved each other, like in the case of Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemingway. No, it was rape, because she was in no position to consent as his slave.
Yes. Yeah. And that's just this whole messy conglomeration of, like, fucked up slavery, colonialism, religion, blah.
It's also, I mean, the way that colonialism, what strikes me just now is, like, when I think about religion and tradition, and heritage, like especially Judaism, how in Judaism every holiday is a celebration of the heritage and remembrance where we come from. African Americans were robbed of their entire heritage. Like the whole thing.
I love how you went like heritage. Heritage.
I think that's because as a kid we used to watch AFN, the Armed Forces Network.
Oh,
jeez.
And they always had this thing about heritage. Yeah.
You were robbed because, you know.
It's gone. Yeah. And that's mind-boggling to me, because if you look at, I mean, most religions are a celebration of heritage. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why people like Marco Suda go on and on about Christian
traditions,
Christian heritage. I mean, there is a kernel of truth to that. I mean, we define ourselves through our heritage,
and especially
to call back to tribalism, to what our tribe, the history of our tribe. That's basically what we.
And I think also in the context of the USA specifically, it becomes even more aggravated because you have all these European people or people of European descent running around like, I'm a quarter Irish, I'm a quarter Scottish.
That fucking annoys me. Like, knowing when that really, really, really annoys me in the United States when you talk to someone and they say, yeah, I'm German. Like, what do you mean you're German? Yeah, so I'm an eighth German.
Yeah.
That's nice. In that, I think in that sense, I might be Persian. I have no idea.
Yeah, so, well, so I totally agree with you. But in all fairness, there's this whole thing. So we can kind of blame the World War and Nazis for sort of erasing European heritage from America. Because actually, before World War One, there actually were like communities in America who only spoke German. There were German.
They still are. Texas German is a thing.
Yeah, but it's Pennsylvania too.
Yeah, but it's very much a small minority.
Yeah, but people. There used to be more who.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, in the context of World War II and the rise of the neo Nazis, you know, you didn't really want to be speaking German in the U.S.
Yeah.
Or G Nazis.
But. The thing is, I mean, this is an entire different ballgame, which is an entirely different episode, but also the concept of ethnicity, you know, people say, oh, I'm Irish-American, and then discriminating against blacks in the U.S. It's like, wait, hold on a second. You Irish people and you Italian people, you were at the bottom of the totem pole too until recently.
Oh,
so
yeah.
What the fuck? Anywho.
To bring it back. what interests me is, how are each of you going to celebrate Christmas? Let's start. Ezzy is going.
Because we hadn't finished earlier.
Oh, we hadn't finished. Okay.
No.
Oh, you want to?
Because
sorry.
Because I'm sitting
sorry.
Amongst three men and.
Yeah. Go on.
I'm not religious in the formal sense. I don't believe in God. I am, as I've aged, I've developed a certain amount of. I'm just going to term it spirituality and not in the hoo-hoo Gwyneth Paltrow sense. But kind of going along with my parents taught me of everything is connected and whatnot. And that combined with my African-American experience in particular, rather music. Like, when I watched Aretha Franklin's Homegoing, so not funeral, Homegoing, we call it, I felt it.
So that's a religious experience.
That's a religious experience. When I listen to...
Also calling it Homegoing.
Yeah, also calling it Homegoing. When I listen to gospel, when I listen to jazz, there is something... I'm not ready to exactly articulate it.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely would say I'm not completely...
Is that holy to you? Like, because we were talking earlier, we were talking about blasphemy and how certain things feel blasphemous to us. Is there something that's blasphemous to you?
yeah, I have to say. White people singing gospel as a joke. That feels blasphemous.
Saying or singing?
Singing.
Mm-hmm.
That feels really blasphemous. You know, when people...
That feels just really inappropriate.
It feels inappropriate, but when they're
when
they're like, amazing grace, and all that bullshit, and they don't really know, they don't know the history, they don't know the feeling, they don't... That feels blasphemous. That feels wrong. Mm-hmm. And not just politically speaking. Mm-hmm.
But I think that's what blasphemy is, this feeling of wrongness. Yeah. Like something just wrenches inside of you, like, this should not.
It's just not right. Like,
somebody faulting you with their action.
Yes, but it's really weird. Like, just in our religious context, like when something feels blasphemous to us, like I think all of us, on a cerebral level, on an intellectual level, realize this is a really archaic.
Mm-hmm.
Tribalistic base thinking. primal yes, emotional right. response, and it's difficult for me to fight against that.
Yes,
and I feel the need to fight against it.
Yeah,
there's a very good basically summary of how humans basically found their way to the now, which is Yuval Noah Harari, Sapiens: A History of Humankind, where he basically chronicles the very early beginnings of the universe up until now. And he likes to...
Based on the work Guns, Germs, and Steel by Jared Diamond. Just saying.
Yeah. There's a lot of flaws in that book, by the way.
Yeah, yes, but it's still very... I mean, as an entrance to the whole topic, it's still not bad.
Anyways, one topic. One topic he always kind of circles back to would be myths. Mm-hmm. So any kind of human construct, in a way, is a myth. So the nation of Germany, the nation of the U.S. is a myth.
Yeah.
There is no physical thing that is the U.S. There is a idea or a myth in our heads,
mm-hmm.
and it's the same thing about religions.
Just like how Catholicism isn't Christianity,
however much Catholics would like to believe that.
Exactly. Even though 85% of the rituals that you perform as a Catholic are the same that you perform as a Protestant.
Yes, exactly.
But what we can all agree on is that we do have a certain... We all find certain things blasphemous.
Mm-hmm.
We have all either been raised or, in my case, are discovering a certain amount of spirituality and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And that all are also ethnic... Our ethnic roots, if you will, are... undeniably attached to religion.
Yes.
Yes. And I think that's a very good segue to answering Nathan's question on how we're going to be celebrating Christmas.
Yeah. Okay. Then.
Because I think for me, that is really the case that you have this, it's really much intertwined family and religion, where I couldn't visit my family back in Nigeria, especially, without then also coming into contact with Catholicism and coming into contact with the rituals and coming into contact with fasting and praying.
And all that jazz.
And all that jazz. And it will be the same for me this Christmas.
So you're going to Nigeria? No.
No. Well, that was the plan originally.
Okay.
In the end, we made other plans. But we will be celebrating in a small circle, so just my mom, my dad, and my sister in Berlin, and presumably we'll be going to church.
Mm-hmm.
And this is especially interesting for me this year, because this is the first time I would actually call myself, and it still feels weird to call myself an atheist, or I mean, kind of separated from church. So... I honestly don't know how it will feel yet.
Oh, to translate this. basically, you were raised Catholic, you were a believer, a practicing Catholic person, and now you no longer consider yourself a practicing Catholic person as of recent, and now for the first time since that decision, you are going into a church to celebrate Christmas.
What I just said, yes.
Yes. I was translating for them because
it didn't really connect. Okay, wow, this is the first time. Okay,
yeah. So I went to a church to celebrate a wedding recently.
Mm-hmm.
It felt off,
mm-hmm.
but still very much familiar, of course. Because I mean, you know this, like I could go to church. Half asleep and still kind of go along with the sermon.
Just,
and
you just know the drill.
You know all the beats and yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it's very much like theater.
Oh, we're in so much trouble, but yeah. Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. Ezzy.
What was the question?
How are you celebrating?
How am I not a shit? Okay, Christmas. I'm not going home for Christmas. I'm never home for Christmas, if only because flight prices are fucking ridiculous, and who needs Michigan in the winter? Also, I grew up with Christmas as just kind of very secular, just, you know, a lot of presents and whatnot. Sorry, a lot of presents. But I haven't lived with my parents, I haven't lived at home since I was 17 and a half. And I've always, every year, I get friends who invite me to their respective celebrations with their family. I'm like, thank you, but I don't need that drama.
You would feel like the odd one out.
Also, there's always this family drama, and I don't need that.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy the quiet. I enjoy that everyone else is busy, and I literally, what I do every fucking year, I put on some comfy clothes, I put on some Motown, and I make pancakes.
Yeah.
I put on a movie. That is my Christmas. And I just dance around the house, and I'm happy. And usually I'm alone, completely alone. There's been a couple of years, and maybe I'll do this year, where, like, on the afternoon, the evening, like, I'll invite someone over, and we'll just, like, hang out, something that, so other people who are alone on Christmas, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what are you guys... What?
That would just feel so... depressing to me, because Christmas.
And that's what everyone
says. Yeah. That's what
I know. I absolutely understand. Like, I definitely appreciate having a day for myself, even a weekend or just a couple of days. But since it is Christmas, and even though it shouldn't mean anything, it would still feel extremely sad to me to be around, to be alone around this time.
I find that ridiculous.
Yeah,
it is absolutely ridiculous.
I think
in this case,
I don't disagree. I absolutely agree with you.
You're the odd one out, Vincent, because I'm pretty sure that Ezzy,
yeah,
Ahmed,
yeah,
and me, having grown up in a Christian society,
yeah, mm-hmm,
without being Christian, have experienced Christmas in a very similar way. Like,
yeah,
because I mean, were you done?
I was pretty much done, because it's like, but I get to talk about what Vincent talked about, like every year people are like, oh my god, it's so depressing. I'm like, no, it's fucking awesome. And you probably,
it's for me it's similar, but I think I first want to hear how Ahmed celebrates or spends his Christmas, and then I'm gonna go
yeah,
into,
yeah,
because I have to say something to
Are you going to talk about Chinese food, Vincent? Nathan?
Yes, that too.
Okay, so so the last few years I've spent Christmas have actually been different how I normally spend it. So my normal way of spending Christmas, so basically I view Christmas as sort of like this very much like a commercial holiday.
Yep.
Because yes, it's all about buying a bunch of shit for every single person you've interacted with in the last year.
Do you give presents?
No.
I don't either.
I do not celebrate Christmas at all.
I don't give presents either. And it's so financially wonderful.
Yeah. And I make this very clear with everybody I know that I believe in the power of random gifting.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fact that you have to give somebody a gift on this specific day actually diminishes the meaning behind whatever you give them. Because it means that either you got it for them because you had to, mm-hmm, or you bought them something months ago and just sat on it because you knew you had to give it to them on this day.
Which is also shit.
Yeah, and it's bullshit on so many levels. And so that's why you sort of end up with, as soon as like October rolls around now, is all the Christmas decorations start coming out.
Oh God,
like even,
yeah,
in America, they just kind of start ignoring Thanksgiving. Which, by the way, my parents treat that as cheap turkey day.
Oh, God.
Like, that's all it is. And I'm like, hey, lots of turkeys. They're cheap. Let's get some.
Thanksgiving to my family is like, oh, the day where we all get to eat and celebrate the mass genocide of a people,
yeah,
day. But yeah,
pretty much. Like, you know, Christmas, it's a pagan holiday, you know, where they basically, pagans would chop down a tree and then just worship the tree. And now people chop down a tree, put it in their house, stand around it and stare at it. So it's kind of the same thing.
Also, there's a fat guy that brings
there's
presents.
There's also a fat guy involved.
Fat old white guy.
Who breaks into your house.
And drinks milk and eats cookies. Talk about a fetish. And then delivers presents.
Oh God, right now I'm thinking of this fat guy with his white beard, drinking milk in that sexually suggestive way.
Oh,
God, just like, it's like streaming down the cheeks.
Hold on. To be clear, I am not anti-kink. I am the last person. I am very pro-kink. But that is a creepy narrative.
I am sex positive. That is creepy.
Yeah.
and also the bad kids get coal. So why do you think we got global warming?
It's just weird.
But there's so many levels. But so anyways, can kind of get back to this. Yeah. So I don't celebrate Christmas at all in any way. So I usually spend it by watching The Hog's Father.
The what?
The Hogfather. That is a Terry Pratchett thing.
Yeah, it's a Terry Pratchett novel that was adapted to a movie. And the movie's actually pretty awesome.
Is it the one where Charles Dance plays a patrician?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm terrible with names of actors.
Okay, Charles Dance is Tywin Lannister from Game of Thrones. And in one of the movie adaptations of a Terry Pratchett novel, he plays the patrician. And the patrician is the person who rules Ankh-Morpork, the central city, and he's just perfect for the role.
No, I don't believe so. But the Hog's Father is great. It's because it has this amazing.
It's not the Hog's Father. It's the Hog.
The Hog Father. It's got this great atheist undertone. It's great. So usually what I do is I spend Christmas watching that movie and eating a bunch of great food.
One second. This is delicious. On Christmas, the Muslim watches The Hog Father.
Yes.
This is brilliant. I'm loving it.
Yeah. And a Jew is summarizing that.
Yeah, that's usually what I do. I just sort of spend time by myself, sometimes my friends and I, we get together and have what we call an orphan Christmas. Because we don't
That sounds depressing.
We don't go back for Christmas, so it's basically we're all kind of stuck in the city together, and we just kind of like get together, play board games, and watch a movie or something. the last few years, I've been going to a friend's, with a friend to her family, you know, who live in the countryside. They're all atheists, but then they still do Christmas, and I don't sell her Christmas, so I end up sitting around this tree while they all give gifts, and I just kind of sit off to the side, being like, all right, cool. But then sometimes give me gifts, which makes it really awkward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because you feel that pressure, you have to give something back. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So basically, I just avoid celebrating Christmas as much as possible because it just always ends up like just being this really awkward, shitty thing where I'm like, I don't really give gifts, but people feel they have to give me gifts. Yeah. I'm there. So.
Do you also go off your way like this time of year to tell? So people who are likely to give gifts to you, like your closest friends and whatnot, do you go out of your way to tell them, like, by the way, I'm not getting you shit, so you don't have to give me shit either?
Yeah, I tell people all the time. But I still have friends who are just like, fuck you, I'm giving you a gift.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's your free choice to make. I'm not going to tell you otherwise, but I just want to let you know you're not going to get anything.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, I just wrote down three words, which I got from each of you.
Okay.
Getting analytical.
From Vincent, I got family. From Ezzy, I got quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And from Ahmed, I got gifts.
Fuck you.
for the very simple reason, because the most, what you talk about most is the act of not giving gifts.
True.
But mm-hmm. that being the central idea of you celebrating Christmas. Fun fact! Christmas is about family, quiet, and gifts. Just to summarize
that's
that. I found it very, very funny listening to all three of you. Because basically the way I've celebrated Christmas was something from each of you either mixed or on its own throughout the years. Because being a Jew and... I mean, Christmas used to be really, really depressing for me, as a kid especially, or no, more like a teenager, because as a kid, my parents would take me along to a Chinese restaurant.
Exactly.
That's
a Jewish stereotype.
In the United States, it's a Jewish stereotype that on Christmas, Jewish families go out to Chinese restaurants.
Because they're open and they're kosher.
Exactly. as a kid,
what's Chinese food kosher?
Because you don't mix, there's hardly any dairy in it, if at all.
Yes.
And kosher.
You're not.
But doesn't the meat need to be?
There's different degrees of kosher. Yeah. I mean, if you're Orthodox, you only eat meat that has been slaughtered in a kosher way. But the general kosher idea is that you shouldn't mix
dairy and meat.
Dairy and meat. Okay. That's.
Basically,
yeah. So, as a kid, I just tagged along with my parents with whatever they were doing. And usually my mother, coming from a Christian family, we sometimes went to my grandmother's and celebrated mm-hmm. Christmas there. But usually, like, especially when I entered my teens, Christmas was very depressing because my parents went off to do their thing. And I had no friends who were available. I basically sat at home thinking, I would love to do something.
Make pancakes, honey. It's fun.
Yeah, exactly. I was listening to you and I was like, geez, I wish I had been able to enjoy that silence the way, because I got the depressing bit. Because, and I think that comes from having grown up in a household that, I mean, we never had celebrated Christian traditions unless we went to my grandmother's, but I still grew up with Christmas as a concept, especially because it was all around me.
Yeah.
And having had it as a kid, like visiting my grandmother's and there was a Christmas tree and all the cousins were there and they're all Christian. Mm. But as a teenager then, that was gone.
Mm.
And then it felt like something was missing. So I got the depression bit that Vincent mentioned, that it sounds depressing. And that's what it was for me. So I tried to do something with it, but in the end, it was basically just sitting home alone, being depressed day. That's what Christmas was for me.
Instead of leaning into it.
Instead of leaning into it.
Finally some peace and quiet.
it was just like, I don't know what to do with myself on this day.
Or in Germany's case, 2 days?
Two days. It's just, usually it was 1 day. Like, the second day,
usually I had friends who were really fed up with their family, yeah, and we could just go out and do something, or but it was that one day that was really weird because it's this limbo,
yeah,
where nothing. And to get to a positive aspect, what I personally like about Christmas as a concept are basically the three things all of you mentioned: family, quiet, and gifts. Mm. Gifts being the least important part, but the whole thing that I mean, ever since I married, my wife is Catholic, so every Christmas we go visit her parents, and I started to really like that. And I've started to really like the idea, like, a couple of weeks earlier, we have Hanukkah, which is a family thing that we do, and then we go visit my wife's family.
Mm.
And I like that because it's a really, the family just gets together. My wife comes from a Polish background, so Polish Christmas is interesting because they eat a lot of fish. actually, only fish. And then it's just sitting around the fireplace, enjoying the peace and quiet. Like, there's nothing. It's the whole concept of Shabbat. The idea of Shabbat is you have a day where you just don't do anything. And then that's basically, Christians basically said, we'll work all year, but Christmas
is the one day.
So on a societal level, that's also something. So, for example, I grew up with a working mom, and Christmas was always, well, wonderful because mom was home for 2 days. She didn't have to work, so she came home early.
Way more relaxed than she usually was,
and she came home early on Christmas Eve. And it was this whole thing where it just kind of got ingrained that there's nothing kind of to do other than stay at home, and that's also why, I was kind of so. Not taken aback, but it felt so lonely, what as you described, even though I completely understand her point as well.
But what I pick up on from both of you in particular is this whole, you know, Christmas being very family based and grateful for the time and the relaxed time to be able to spend with family. And what I hear from that is like, oh, I can see that on the other hand, because I'm trying to remember
all the fights on the second
exactly.
That, a lot of I'm really glad that's the other side. I'm really glad I never had that. Like, that doesn't
all the drama.
That, like, all the drama. I'm really glad I don't like.
But I'm trying to like remember the Christmases that I had until the last time I was with my parents was when I was 17. So like nearly 10 years ago, and I'm trying to remember the Christmas beforehand. The only things I can remember are, okay, putting up the tree with my grandpa and decorating, and like the gingerbread house, that kind of thing, on my mother's side. But otherwise, to me, it wasn't special at all. Like, yeah, I got presents. That was nice. Also, but I was that kid because I was one of the first in the generation who always got presents. So I don't remember it's particularly special, specifically because it was just another day where all the aunts and uncles came over for food, and we did that anyway every week. It was just happened to be cold and happened to be a weird-ass tree in the living room. Like, there was no... So for me, the whole family aspect, it's like, cool, but it's every
week. That's it all the time.
Yeah.
And that's... that's the thing. What I like about Christmas is that in some cultures, it forces people to actually say, dude... You got a family.
They don't take that time.
Yeah. People don't take that time, and I like that. But
it's also
at the same time, I really agree with Ahmed.
Yeah.
I like his stance on giving gifts. The whole philosophy of giving random gifts, because a little bit of a tangent. I have a problem with things like the Oktoberfest or Fastnacht, Karneval, in Germany, because I feel like, why do you need that excuse to celebrate? Why do you... I feel like...
Like Catholic and Jewish guilt.
Yeah, like. but the idea of like, okay, throughout the year, I have to be a serious, regular person, but during those 2 weeks, I can go wild. And I think like, why not
do that all year round?
Just every once in a while, every time you feel like it, do it. And do the same things with... The same thing with gifts. I love that. And basically, because I'm guilty of what you say. Every time I think of a gift for someone...
You put it away for later.
I put it away for later. I write it down. I'm like, this is an awesome Christmas or Hanukkah or birthday gift, whatever. I put it down for later. And I like the idea of the random gift giving.
Yeah.
And that's a weird thing. Like, and that's why I like how we each of us celebrate Christmas differently, because in the end, living in a Western society, in the end, Christmas touches all of our lives, and whether we want it or not, it's just...
Yeah, you can't completely...
You can't shut it out. It's not there. So each of us, we just have to deal with the situation. Yeah. Like, most of the world just shuts down for one day. For our world, in our...
Yeah.
It just shuts down, and how we deal with it. And I think each of us has their own spiritual way of dealing with it. I mean, you...
I lean into the quiet.
You lean into the quiet, and that is an experience.
I'm literally that person. Okay, just to like, I'm not saying this to be provocative, but this is what happens. I have like a sweater on. I usually have my comfiest socks on, and I'm just literally, I put my hair up, and I'm dancing around in Motown while I'm making pancakes, and I'm just doing it for myself. And sometimes I have some whiskey with it. Depends.
How is that provocative?
Because I'm not wearing pants. And then I realized that when I was trying to describe it, that sounds like a weird, like, pseudo-pornographic, like, it's not sexual anyway, it's just, it's comfy, I make myself comfy.
Yeah, just, and... but it's a day, but yeah. Basically, it's a day of rest, it's a Shabbat.
It's a Shabbat for me, but,
And the same goes for you, Ahmed, right? I mean, like...
Well, no...
I mean, forced, basically, because there's... What else do you do on Christmas Day?
Yeah, nothing really. So, yeah, it's like either I sit and watch a movie thing, or I have some friends, we do a thing. But usually I prefer to kind of just, you know, like, similar to what Azzy does, you know? It's like, it's a day for myself where I can just sort of enjoy it, like, the quiet.
But do you value that? Is it like, that's what interests me now is, like, Christmas happens. It's basically forced upon you because, but is it something that you've come to value? Is it something where you say, nice?
Not really. I could care less if it's Christmas or not, to be honest.
I couldn't care less.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That's
This is Nathan's inner translator coming out.
Please teach me the good ways of English, white man.
Oh. Ooh, this is getting personal.
So drunk Ahmed gets bitchy.
I love how Ahmed, in the course of this episode, you have managed to say so many things where I wasn't like, can I say that without seeming very bigoted? I love that. Well, you're
this is guest, a powerful right? guest.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Oh, by the way, we haven't done that yet. We talked about this earlier. Our first guest on the show.
Woo woo! You know, like an hour and a half in.
Yes, hey.
And on that note,
wait, I had one more pro tip. Flying is super cheap on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day.
Yes,
this is true.
We did that last year. We flew on Christmas Day to Thailand,
and it's like $200.
Yes,
really?
Yes.
Holy shit, I might go home.
Yeah.
No, honestly, a flying on Christmas Day is super fucking cheap. Yeah. But you better be back on my birthday. Just saying.
Yeah.
That also goes for you, but you're, yeah, you.
What? Why is he exempt?
No, I'm going back to the Holy Land.
He's exempt because he already booked a trip to the Holy Land.
Yeah, it's your pilgrimage.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. that's the reason. But talking about the Holy Land, I think this whole, well, no. Actually, 2 weeks ago, you sent us a wonderful video.
Okay, can I set the scene?
Yes.
Okay. It's a wonderful video, I think. You should all watch it.
And we're going to link to it.
We're going to link to it, but it's a video about a man, a British man.
Wait. Since we have...
Yes?
Quote-unquote voice actor, maybe?
No. I'm a voice director.
You dabble. Dabble sometimes.
I dabble badly.
Exactly. So we have a dabbling voice actor.
No.
Two other actors, we could just... kind of reenact it.
Do you have the script printed out?
Yeah, but the thing is that the video works through the visuals and not through the voice acting, so...
Just an idea. Okay,
I enjoy the idea, but
But Vincent and I have dreads, so.
Yeah, but are you going to say hello? Okay, we're spoiling it basically.
Yes.
So okay. Let me talk about the video.
Should I pretend to be a white man for you?
You can do it so well.
Okay. Anyways, there's this really cool video that we're gonna link to about Black Jesus.
Now you spoil it entirely.
What do you mean? Well, yes, but. How are we supposed to talk about it otherwise?
Anyway,
what are you gonna say?
Okay, so, the video is about it's by the BBC. You have this British dude who is obviously white and in church saying, "Oh Jesus, please help me." He's praying.
Okay, you're just killing it. It's about the preconceived notion that Jesus is white because all the depiction in Christianity is of a white Jesus,
skin the color of golden tan.
You're saying I'm killing it. Yes. You just basically summarized it. I was trying to tell the story.
And then Jesus' hair was that like a curly lamb's or sheep or something?
Yes, curly.
He was a black man.
How are we butchering this?
I can tell you.
Okay,
it's called Glühwein, Mead, and Rum and Whiskey. That's how we're butchering this.
Let me try. So, about 2,000 years ago.
Also, your German accent comes out when you're drinking.
About 2,000 years ago, in the Middle East. I don't sound like that.
Okay, I think we can do this in a different way.
So,
audience, what do you think Jesus looked like?
Pro tip: he wasn't white.
Jesus was born in the Middle East.
Yes, and the Middle Eastern people tend to not have a, you know, blinding white and blonde hair complexion.
Especially 2,000 years ago.
Yes.
In the Middle East, you usually had rather darkish skin.
And curly hair.
And curly hair, and more specifically...
Still do.
And more specifically, Jesus was Jewish. That's what people tend to forget. When you go to a church, the pictures you see of Jesus is this white dude with...
And we're not talking about Ashkenazi Jew.
Yeah, isn't it? Well, it's Jesus of Nazareth, isn't it?
Yeah?
Yeah.
No, don't say that too loud.
What?
It's a fairly Jewish, you know, thing. I'm just going to say it sounds very Jewish to me.
Yeah, yeah.
There's this wonderful thing, this wonderful meme of this dude... Putting, I'm bringing it back to Star Wars again. I'm sorry.
Oh,
putting
God.
A picture
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
This dude so giving his mother a picture of Obi-Wan Kenobi, she thinking it's a picture of Jesus. And people think, yeah, that's basically what Jesus looked like.
I mean, basically, whenever you go into a church, even that's the weirdest part. Even if you go to a church in Nigeria, you will have an image of a white Jesus, long brown flowing hair, beard.
It's usually reddish, actually.
Reddish,
it goes into
blonde.
This red, yeah.
They're just going for that ruggedly handsome look.
Yeah, that's very handsome.
It's ruggedly handsome Irish look.
1457 look. And basically... That's just not how Jesus looked. And it
can't have looked like this. It's impossible.
And it's not a matter of debate, but people still accept it as fact or think that Jesus was white.
Jesus was neither white nor Christian.
No.
It's funny because, I'm just going to leave it at that. It's funny. I just realized I can't say why it's funny anyway.
The funny bit is just that this whole segment that we just started is just a complete clusterfuck.
Yeah.
Yes.
We are so out of what the hell this is about. Okay, yeah. So wait.
I think we should do questions now. I think we're nearing the end. Yeah. I think
Ahmed, ask us questions, honey.
We're at 2 hours now.
Oh, Jesus.
We're at 2 hours. I think this is a good point to say.
We're wrapping it up.
We're wrapping it up.
One question each, and then we're done.
Yeah, but I don't think we got that many questions this time.
Oh, there was one other question though from another white dude.
Before we go into the whole segment, if there's any question you want to ask,
ask away.
We're on Facebook. You probably found us on Facebook.
Or us on Instagram.
Some of you have our numbers.
Yes, some of you have our numbers. So just ask us, write us like questions you never dared ask. This is the whole point of the show. So
yep.
Ask.
Discourse.
Or maybe there's no one listening, and that's why they're not asking.
Oh, that's probably. Yeah. We probably have like exactly one odd.
Okay, but one dude, yeah, okay. Thomas so. Von Tegernsee. You yes. must. You must ask us questions. Question from another white dude. Why am I so many friends?
And then Ahmed will ask each of us a question.
Oh yeah, that's yeah. nice.
Wow, let's have that.
Okay, let's start with the audience okay, question so, and then the guest question.
White guy I know asks, "What the hell is up with Black Twitter?" Now,
first explain Black
Twitter. Exactly. Now Vincent audience. Is looking lost. Ahmed is looking like, "Oh bitch, don't talk to me."
I know it's coming my way.
Okay, Black Twitter is basically. Mm-hmm. You guys know the concept of like the dark web, right? Right?
Yeah.
So
because black,
because yeah. black. No, but
pun very much
black
intended.
Black Twitter is basically this concept that there's like a sub world of Twitter that is black. By that I mean that if you are on Twitter and you subscribe and retweet enough black people, and kind of get into that kind of friend circle, if you will, then you are part of Black Twitter.
Well, but that's just the same effect of any social media bubble.
Yeah.
Right? The alt-right has the same thing going where there's not that many liberal people on far-right wing Facebook.
But it sounds better. Black Twitter sounds better than like Tea Party
Twitter. The thing about Black Twitter is, though, that there's a whole subreddit on Reddit called Black Twitter.
Yeah, but that's just like, you know, a bunch of white people being like, oh, look at the funny black man said something.
I'm one of those white people saying that funny black man said something.
But to me, like, I can't, like, on the one hand, yes, there's always, like, these subgroups and these clusters, whatnot, of individual interests on all social media platforms, yeah. But what I would say to what Black Twitter is... For me, I see it in a historical context. Like, I might be completely bullshitting, but it reminds me.
It sounds
me.
Like
it sounds really
damn. Okay.
let her speak.
Yes, yes.
Let her speak.
Yes. Okay. Please continue.
No, Ahmed, you continue.
All right. Okay. All right. Let me see. I'm not.
No. Wait. We don't want to be the people that are shut Ezzy up. No.
So. I'm telling her to speak.
No, I want to hear Ezzy's.
Yes. Yes. I mean,
I'm sorry, Ahmed. I value your opinion, but I do want to hear what Ezzy has to say.
Ezzy has no Please. Opinion.
No. Okay. So I felt that Ezzy was going to sort of tie this back into historical context with why Black Twitter is actually still relevant today.
Really?
And I
you felt
think
that?
That there is a strength behind it. Yes, I am psychic.
Oh, wait, so you're
Nathan.
Justifying the theory?
Yeah, I know. I'm
yes,
saying that there is okay. there's a reasonable justification behind it, so
see,
I feel like you should say it.
It's okay. See, Ezzy has an opinion.
That was never in doubt.
No, never. Drunk Ezzy doesn't flip flop at all. Drunk Ezzy has her opinion and she sticks with it.
Okay.
Okay.
So, hold on.
So as she did hint to me of what she was going to talk about, and I feel there's value behind it. Hence, I'm encouraging her to speak. I got you, my black sister.
Okay, hold on.
This is gold.
No,
this
is
gold.
I
still have no idea where we're going with this.
No.
All right, well, Black Twitter.
Kind of.
All right.
I do think Ezzy has a point.
Okay.
Okay, backed up by my African brother Ahmed, and now Soido backed up by my half-African brother Vincent.
I feel left out.
Yeah. Let's not talk about that.
It's a Jewish lot. We're okay with that.
Okay, so Black Twitter for me, when I think of Black Twitter, the concept of Black Twitter, I really am reminded of the civil rights movement. So what people think today of like Black Lives Matter is, the only reason Black Lives Matter has become so prominent and compared to movements in the past, so about 2-3 decades, is because of the advent of social media and of camera phones in particular. So this act of being able to take a picture, take a video, and then share really quickly to a large demographic. And it reminds me of the civil rights movement in the context of particularly the 60s, with the advent of more people getting televisions in their private homes, and the major leaders of the movement at the time knew that white people in particular aren't going to believe that, oh my god, white terrorism actually exists and is really bad still unless they see it on TV. So for me, Black Twitter has a lot to do with activism. To me, Black Twitter has to do a lot with being connected on a broader scale, sharing of truth, if you will, but also sharing of joy. When I think of Black Twitter, I don't just think of civil rights. I think of, like, Black girl and Black boy magic.
This brings me back to last month.
Yeah?
Tribalism.
Yep.
This is, I mean, and this is tribalism in the best sense.
Yeah.
And also...
where it's creating a safe space.
A safe space bubble, it's all the same thing. You have your social media bubble. You have your safe space. You have your, in German, Stammtisch. And a Stammtisch is nothing else but a safe space. Mm. And Black Twitter is basically a global safe space. Yeah.
It's a very transparent one, though.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. Yeah. I mean, but any safe space usually is.
But
yeah.
Ahmed,
like,
you're gonna...
It's not as if safe spaces are like around... there's concrete walls around them. I mean, you can look at in any safe space.
Yeah.
Well, or cultural safe space.
Yes, I have things to say about that, but I'm actually going to mention what I was going to say about what, as he was saying. So kind of to continue with the whole thread of like civil rights movement. So you basically had the civil rights movement and created these forums for speaking. And that I think that was actually really, really powerful at the time because it sort of enabled people to sort of come together and talk about the issues that they were dealing with, especially in Black America, because that's very much a culture in America that is separate from the rest, you know, like white culture or however you want to say
it.
It is
different.
It's completely different in a very shocking way. You guys can, you know, string me up and torture me for saying this, but like the show Atlanta.
That's a weird analogy to use.
I know. The glue line's kicking in. So you can actually like the show Atlanta. Watch it because it actually gives an insight.
Shout out to Vincent. I know you watch Atlanta.
Yeah. So not our Vincent, other Vincent.
Hi,
Vincent.
The show Atlanta actually gives a nice insight into what it is actually to be like a black man in Black America.
Or itself. Dear white people.
Or Dear White People, for example. I don't know about the new Netflix one. That one's kind of meh.
I like it, but I see what your point.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Yeah. Anywho. Another film. A film. I'm just gonna plug a bunch of like stuff to watch. Mm-hmm. A movie. I Am Not Your Negro.
Yes. Oh my lord.
Watch
yes.
it. It talks about the civil rights movement and...
Text of James Baldwin spoken by Samuel L. Jackson. Yes. It does not get more woke and Black than that.
Yes, it is an amazing film to watch. So anyways, kind of tie it back into Black Twitter. So you had these formats where people were actually able to sort of like talk together and share their issues and discuss them back in the 60s. And that kind of continued on to the 90s and then to the modern day. Now what Twitter created was it created this open platform where anybody could get in there and talk. So before, you know, it had to be people who were very empowered and able to get out there and speak. Mm. And public speaking, as everybody knows, is very terrifying and difficult to do.
And also potentially life-threatening in the case of Black people in the U.S.
Yes, because it makes you a target, because it makes you very visible to the public. And then Twitter, on the other hand, you know, is like anybody can sign up for an account. They can participate. They can discuss. They can share their experiences, which then actually takes modern everyday life for a Black person and puts it out there. And that's what creates this Black Twitter, because you have people actually sort of connecting and talking to each other, which creates this big mesh and this sort of like a pseudo culture on the internet that becomes what is now called Black Twitter.
Boom, what he said.
All right. And with that, do you have
some questions? Well, Ahmed, you get to ask each of us one question.
Oh, dear.
Before the Glühwein completely incapacitates us.
Okay.
I just had a Glühwein with a lot of 65% rum. Jesus.
Why didn't I get any?
You didn't ask.
Can I get
some? You must ask for your booze.
Okay.
We don't have any Glühwein.
I mean, it's basically just rum. You'll get one after we're done, okay?
Okay, so I actually have a question.
Ahmed's questions.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask a question both Azzy and Vincent with this. So I moved to Germany about 5 years ago now. And when I first moved here, it was actually a huge departure from living in America, where actually I did not feel discriminated against. Like, even though I was still surrounded by a lot of white people, it was sort of like I felt that in Europe, they...
Where in the U.S. then were you there, surrounded by white people?
Northwest.
So like Seattle?
Yeah, Seattle area, basically.
Yeah, okay, that's not typical white America, usually.
Yeah, but also I grew up in, like, on the other side of that state.
Yeah.
So, like, farming country, where that racism was very, exactly. very much prevalent. Like, there was a lynching in a town that was, like, half-hour drive from where I lived. Actually, no, 15 minutes from where I lived in the 90s.
And fuck the 90s, there was still lynchings. There was just a lynching 2 months ago in Baltimore.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I'm not kidding you.
Oh, yeah. No, this is the fucked up thing about America.
There are lynchings still on a regular basis.
Yeah. And so, yeah. So, I moved out here and I did not feel discriminated against at all. And then...
It's nice here. I mean, no KKK, no lynchings, no guns. It's nice.
Yeah. But then the refugee crisis happened. And that... And actually, I felt
or what very, you call karma, but that's another story.
Yeah, at that point, I felt a very strong shift in how I was perceived by people.
Mm-hmm.
And people
basically hear your name and they're like,
and they look at you and they think, oh, you're a refugee.
Oh yeah, yeah. When I was searching for apartments, the first one I managed to get is because I showed up wearing a full suit and tie and looked really important. Mm-hmm. Every other one, I dressed exactly the same as everybody else who was there. But I would still be sort of perceived as less in some fashion. Mm-hmm. I have lots of discussion with my friends about this, but this is sort of my feeling about things. So my question for you guys is, with the refugee crisis and all stuff that happened, did you ever feel there was like a shift in how you're perceived?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I have one very poignant story to that. One I would argue that I still feel it to today. And by the way, what I'm about to talk about is not any fault of any refugees, because as I said, it's karma. I mean, that's what happens when you exploit places for hundreds of years. People, their countries get fucked up and they come to nicer countries.
Yeah.
Anywho. We're talking like a week or two into the quote-unquote peak of the refugee quote-unquote crisis. And I hate the term crisis.
Yeah, I really don't.
I hate the term crisis. I hate the term wave. They're so laden and so bullshitty. Anywho.
It's also acting like basically any kind of migration is... an event that's not normal.
Yeah.
Basically, human history is defined by migration.
Forced by circumstance migration, essentially. Yes,
absolutely.
So there have always been waves of migration.
Yes, but
it's actually saving Europe to some extent, because here the birth rates, for example, are going down. So those are kind of being then.
Don't say that too loud to the AfD.
No. The population overall is being stabilized by having more migrants.
Yes, there's no question. I mean,
because otherwise the population would decline.
We just had the whole I forgot the name, but just now the government decided a new thing to keep migrants who move to Germany who work. To keep them in work, because all the corporations were like, we need these people.
Yeah.
Don't just send them and back. We need them. But get back to the question, how did you feel?
Because the topic of expat versus refugee or just migrant in Germany is also another episode.
Yes.
Anyways, we're talking like this was in the summer. When was this? What, 2-3 years ago? Something like that, right?
Yeah, it's about 3 years ago.
Three years ago or so. So I'm 22. I just visited friends in Regensburg, and I have my Regensburg, which is like an hour and a half north of here. I had my backpack on, my traveling backpack, jeans, chucks, I think I had a normal t-shirt on, headphones, and basically look like any other student.
Except
I'm black. And I got out at a Hauptbahnhof in Munich, the main train station here. I'm kind of in the middle of the train, and everyone else is coming off the train, essentially only white people. And at the end of the track, there are police in riot gear. And I see, so I'm walking, maybe...
Can you explain riot gear just for those who are entirely familiar with
it? Police dress as if they're going to war.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically riot gear.
That's a pretty good sum. Really, yeah.
And from what I can tell, so all the I don't know, 100 people in front of me are, as far as I could tell, mostly white, or if not all white. And I'm approaching the end of the track, and they see me, and I see them see me, and then they all rush towards me, and only me.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, passport. And I answer in German, wie bitte, Sie wollen mein Pass sehen? Show us your passport. They refuse to speak German with me. I get my passport because, you know, as a non-EU citizen, you always have to have your passport on you. And I show them my passport, and they still refuse to speak German with me. And I said, sind Sie wirklich Studentin? Are you really a student? Looking at my student visa. Yeah, ich bin wirklich Studentin. Yeah, I'm actually a student. And asking me all these questions. When I get to Germany, why am I in Germany? Double-checking my story, da-da. And I'm watching all these white people, also people my age, file past me, and no one else is getting checked. And because they were only, which is also weird because the train was coming from the north, which is also triple weird, but my point is, since the refugee influx, I'm going to choose to call it, I like that term a lot more than wave or crisis.
That's better.
Yeah.
I definitely get checked a lot more. I get checked on average about 4 or 5 times a year by the police in Munich. And it's not because I'm acting up. I dress and I act just like any other white girl here. And yet, I'm the one who's checked. I'm always asked questions really on regarding my visa status and regarding, just double checking if I am who I say I am. And sometimes they refuse to speak German with me. And sometimes they even really aren't sure if I'm truly American or if I have a bullshit passport. I've had the weirdest experiences. And that's
it is confusing. An American who speaks German is really fucking confusing.
Yeah, I kind of to some extent get that, but it's just like, it's just super also rude if someone answers in perfect German and then you're going to respond.
It doesn't surprise, quite honestly, it doesn't surprise me. We just had, no one is surprised by the newsflash that, hey, the Frankfurt Police Department is full of right-wing extremists. Yeah. That's what's in the news right now. And no one's surprised, but this is Frankfurt we're talking about. And we're in Bavaria, and we are all very much aware that the Bavarian police is much more right-wing than the Frankfurt police. So if we have this in the Frankfurt police,
it's like
I'm,
it would stand to reason that it's
so. Basically, to answer your question very shortly, just to summarize, things are shitty because things are shitty for refugees because they're being treated shitty.
Yes,
and I would never say that things are as bad for me as a refugee because I have the paperwork. But I'm definitely feeling the effects more than my white female peers.
Yeah, yeah,
Vincent.
It's actually also, I think, interesting for me because growing up, I talked a bit about this in the first episode, but growing up, I didn't exactly feel or perceive to be a migrant, but I was made to feel.
You are German. That's the thing. That's the difference. The difference between Ezzy and Vincent is Vincent is born and raised here. That's
exactly. And for that reason, it didn't really, or maybe it doesn't really hit me as much because I have the German paperwork as well to back it up, to kind of show, I'm allowed to be here, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And
but that's
that is another kind of worms. And then also the fact that I'm light skinned would also, I think, play into that a bit, in that this was something that I heard from
for our audience. So
Vincent, my mom's white and my dad's black. So
Vincent, Ezzy, and Ahmed, they're all black.
Yeah, we're like,
but
for the context of this conversation,
we had this discussion earlier. But for our German audience,
We're higher melanin.
Vincent has the lightest skin tone of the
How world. Dare you?
Like, there's, if you're gonna shade us all, Vincent is definitely those.
Yeah, basically, Vincent is the light, as in and me, basically.
Yeah, you're basically
three shades of black.
Three shades of black.
In my defense, I haven't seen the sun in years.
That's because you're an engineer and just a chemical.
I'm a chemist.
Chemist. Yes. Yeah. So you sit inside.
I spend most of my days in the lab. Anyways.
Yes.
Turn your arm around. Turn your arm around.
Okay, as he wants to compare shades.
Yeah, I'm like darker than Vincent.
Actually, Nathan's not that far off.
That's
circling back to human phenotypes. But
yes. Anyway.
Three shades of black and a Jew.
I think the fact that I'm obviously
not someone who can pass, quote unquote, as white. So people will definitely look at me and see, okay, I'm not Caucasian, but it's still in some cases, I feel like if there is someone, for example, if Ahmed and me would be walking down the street,
Ahmed was more likely to be checked by the police than
definitely.
You.
I feel like they would, in some cases, honestly, just walk past me. Whereas mm-hmm. maybe 3-4 years ago, that wouldn't have been the case, where we both would have been checked.
Yeah. So the crazy thing is, I have actually never been checked by the police.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
During, where the fuck do me, you hide?
That's a very, very funny story. Me actually in Germany also only once.
Why? What is it about me?
I don't know. So during the huge influx and everything was kind of going crazy with Hungary, I actually went to Hungary on the train.
You also did the stupidest shit.
And I had, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But he has a weird sense of humor and entertainment. So
yeah, but he knows what I'm talking about, which I'm not going to say on air. But yeah.
So basically, I went through, a train through Austria. I had to get off. Take a bus, and they actually had like these little stations set up in the trains with like blankets and stuff for refugees and migrants. Take get a bus across the Austrian border where they had tents set up for processing them, and nobody stopped me at all. And then when I was coming back, I had to take a train, and the train was basically packed full of like refugees and everything. I don't want to say migrants, so I feel that's kind of like downplaying it. And when I got to Munich, I got off the train with all of them, and nobody stopped me. So it's weird because it's like...
So the lesson is basically hang around all migrants if you're hanging around mostly white people, then you're going to be the one migrant picked out.
I'm always used to sticking out like a sore thumb. And it's really weird to me because before I moved here, I was actually reading and like doing some research, like is a racist impression in Germany or not? And I heard people complaining about getting checked. And so when I came here, I expected it, but it never happened.
So wait, in those 5 years you've been in Germany, you've never been stopped by the police once?
Never. I've actually, sometimes I walk to the, I go up to the police and I talk to them because I'm like, I see something. And sometimes they just look really confused.
Yeah. Because normally we cross the street and try not to be obvious.
Yeah. And I'm like, hey, there's this problem down the street that way. Like, why are you talking to us?
That was very Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah.
No, but I mean,
like, why are you talking?
Honey, like, God bless.
It's way deeper.
God bless you. Like, that's really cool. And I'm happy for you, really. Yeah. Because for the most of us, and to put this in context, because people haven't seen me, look, it's not that I'm acting out all ghetto and whatnot, no matter how I sound drunk. Excuse me, I have to speak loud. Slow. No, sorry. It's just, I mean, all three of you can attest. I act right. I was raised right. I act normal.
Yes.
I look normal.
Very much so.
Everybody's normal. No one is.
Yeah, I think
so. I think normal is very, very tricky.
No, but I'm asking is I don't act aggressive.
You don't act out.
It's not a question of aggressive. But what I remember from my teenage high school pot smoking days is
edgy.
If you look at Ahmed and you, Ahmed, he wears fucking Ray-Ban glasses, and police responds to money. If you look like money, they usually don't stop you.
Are you saying I look poor? Mommy, daddy, see, like, come on.
You know what I mean. Basically, when I went out,
shit, really?
Yes, it's basically the dress in a suit and tie, and it's like,
yeah, and then you can just breeze.
Well, of course, if you dress in a suit and tie,
that's what I mean. I mean, that's basically the talk that every black kid gets in the United States,
and it's true, and that's what kind of is doing, and what I refuse to do because I refuse to have to dress. It's not that I dress poor, it's just I dress like every other student here.
And exactly, that's the thing. Like, you don't dress different from any other student, but you get stopped because you look like a student and you're black. Yeah. And that's like a bitch of a combination.
Yeah, it is.
And that's the prejudice of the police. Like, if you're black and you're dressed like, not necessarily black, if you look foreign, it doesn't have to be black, brownish something,
you know,
But then if you dress like you look like
a normal
you
person.
Have a job that is important yeah. and stuff, and then they're like, yeah, that's probably some
one of the good migrants.
Yeah.
Yes, he's one of the good ones.
Exactly.
The exception.
I hate that so much.
It's, you're one of the good Negroes. Oh.
And that's what I hate. What I hate. Yeah. What I basically hate about the new law about migrants who are allowed to stay when they work
mm-hmm.
because Arbeit macht frei.
Yeah.
Oh. It just.
Ahmed, you know what he's talking about?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I see that. I love the. I love the concept of finally those who, I mean, they've been people who came here, who worked hard, who learned the language, who have a good job, and then get told by the state that, sorry, you got to go back. And I'm like, what the fuck? They're putting in all this work. And I'm glad that finally,
mm-hmm.
they can stay.
But then what about people that work hard, learn the language, and then don't get a job?
Yes.
They still are...
They still
kind of make an effort to
be
a part of the society. But are still rejected.
And that's what makes me sick about the whole... Because the whole idea of that new law, the whole foundation is Arbeit macht. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that just sickens me to the core.
Mm. As it should.
Because it's basically the slogan under which my ancestors died.
It's effectively like indentured servitude.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
to raise the spirits, maybe I have a bit.
Huh? Well, let's get back to.
Okay. I still had two anecdotes concerning Ahmed's question.
I'll
wrap it up quick. One, I was checked 3 or 4 times while I was in Spain for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
3 times, so I was on a pilgrimage, and.
A very Christian thing to do.
It was a very Christian thing to do. The first time was a Christian experience. The second one wasn't. Anyways, I was checked by the police 3 times. And then at some point I talked to a Spaniard. And then he said, oh yeah, there were some people or some women that were raped in a town maybe 10 kilometers north of here. So that's why the police is checking.
Because,
black
of course,
people.
All the
suspicious
black people.
Yeah. And then the last time, that was also one story that I told Ezzy right away. Mm-hmm. I was at the Madrid airport. I had already packed up all my things and I was just waiting to go back home. I had 1 hour to kill. And then I was just standing there at the airport. I didn't feel like sitting around. So I wasn't even walking. I was just kind of leaning against the wall. And then 4 policemen with machine guns come up to me, and similar to what Ezzy described, they just go, passport.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, in broken Spanglish, basically, I don't have a passport. I'm a European citizen. I have a national ID. And then they go, passport. I said, again, I don't have a passport. I have a national ID. If you can provide me with a reason why I should show it to you, then of course I can do that.
You went full on European citizen. On
yes,
that.
Of course yes. I did.
Nice.
Because I'm a fucking European citizen.
Yes. Which I will say, on the one hand,
it
sounds very smart. Having said that, it's
super
also
dangerous.
Incredibly stupid because you're black.
Yeah. Anyways,
and you're male and you're tall, and that shit will get you killed.
And basically, the policeman kind of expanded his vocabulary a bit. So he was like, I'm police. Passport. And this thing went on for maybe half an hour, maybe 45 minutes. So where I was just kind of insisting that... So I showed him my passport or my ID at some point. And then he was semi-satisfied because it didn't look like a fake, because obviously it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave the ID back to me, and then I was, so why did you check me? And then he again said, I'm the police, I can.
Yeah,
and that's and what they say. That's what's fucked up. They that's can. What,
yeah.
There's no suspicion. There's no
and that's
no justifiable say. Reason mm-hmm. to just walk up to any random, well, not random, but to any black passenger and ask him or her for their passport just because of the color of their skin. But that's what they decided to do because that's the association that they had. In the end, he was still in a position of power that he abused to the extent where I had to go to their van and had to unpack all of my things. Mm-hmm. I had to get every item out of my backpack. And there's 8 people with machine guns standing around me.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this was extremely scary.
Yeah.
And it still doesn't even come close to what some of the people that have to flee their country because of the atrocities that are committed there because of the historical baggage that their countries have.
But people in Badat, I mean, particularly white people, have no idea. And no. As you say, you know, it compares nothing to the people who are fleeing certain atrocities. But the fact, like, shit, I remember, I'm at God Preisplatz a year ago, and there happened to be a few people beating each other up, a few men. And I just happened to be standing next to them. Someone had called the police, and the police come running down the Gleis and have their hand on their guns, and they're looking at me. So I raise my hands, even though I ain't doing shit. It's like there's this permanent angst, this permanent fear that, and you can see, like, walking down the street and the police are just walking and they all turn and look at you. It's just, I hate that. And it's gotten worse. It's gotten a lot worse in the last few years. And that has to do with the influx of refugees. And it's not their fault, but just how they're perceived. And it has to do with the AfD, and it just has to do with fucking racism. Yeah.
There was one story from 7 years ago now, yeah. where this was the first night I spent in Munich. And my mom was extremely worried when I came, when I decided to move to Munich to study, because she was like, oh, well, those Bavarians. And this and that, are you sure? There might be some comments, I mean, and there might be some
racist sound. The thing is, outside of Bavaria, Bavaria has a really shitty reputation.
Mm, yes.
Like,
anyways,
yeah.
So me and my friend are coming back from a party. This was my best friend from high school, who about 1.90 something, blonde, yeah, blue hair. Blonde, blue hair. Blonde, blue eyes. Jesus. Well, ooh, you would look good in
blue
hair.
He would,
yeah. Anyways, blonde, blue eyes. We come back from a party. This was some random... I still don't know where it is, or where it was to this day. It was some random dubstep party in a bunker somewhere in the forest in Munich.
That sounds awesome.
Yes. Anyways, we walk from the S-Bahn station to his place, and then two policemen stop us. And they say there was some sort of attack at the S-Bahn station, yada, yada, yada. You match the description. Please show us your papers.
How many descriptions do they get of a 190?
Anyways, they look at both of us. And then both of them turn to my white friend and are like, yeah, he was blonde, 190. Oh.
That's nice.
And then I was like, huh, nice. So that's what it feels like.
Okay.
Anyways.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So I gotta take my other question. I feel like I used two with you.
Yeah.
Okay. So I talk about race with you guys. Nathan, I'm going to sort of more yeah. about religion. We'll see how that works. Okay, so a couple of days ago, there was this, I read this article about how people in the AfD discovered that Toblerone had obtained halal
status.
Yeah, halal status like 8 months ago.
But they didn't change the recipe at all.
Nothing changed. Nothing changed
at
all.
They just got the certification. Yeah. Toblerone is now halal.
Yeah, and the thing is, the certification is literally, they just go and inspect the facilities. That's all they do. They just walk around and say, okay, yep, you're halal certified. So no actual changes to the process, recipe, anything like that.
The people just said, yeah, that you're halal. It, your whole process, it's just Yeah. What you is halal. Perfect.
It's there basically like any other food certificate where you say, oh, this is vegan, this is vegetarian, this is kosher, BO. This is halal, BO.
Yeah. No, kosher is different.
Kosher is different.
Okay. So anyway, after I cut wind of this, and Twitter kind of exploded about, you know, freaking out, talking about Islamophobia in Europe, you know, sweeping across the nation.
As they do every other day because of, half days.
And people started talking about boycotting, which is kind of dumb because it's a chocolate bar.
No, they weren't talking about Islamophobia, they're talking about Islamization.
No, sorry, they're talking about Islamization, yeah. But it was Islamophobia, sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you for the very good correction. So, you're very much aware of the political landscape in Germany and much of Europe.
Yes, so, painfully so.
Yeah, painfully so. Do you feel that with the rise of the AfD and how they're sort of pushing things on Twitter and social media and stuff, that there is going to be a shift in... I'm not going to say at the government level, but like religious freedom when it comes to the people commonly because of how AfD is sort of pushing this Islamophobia, xenophobia to regular people who are sort of like taking it in due to whatever issues they may have with how the government's proceeding or problems they may have and they're sort of looking for an escape.
So do I think there's going to be a shift towards more Islamophobia in the general public due to the AfD's antics?
Yeah, or just sort of like a using religion as a scapegoat. So like they're sort of like, yeah, Islam is obviously the biggest one they can use and abuse right now. Do you feel that it might bleed over to other religions at some point?
That depends. It really does. So right now, I feel like Europe is on a tipping point. In general, regarding xenophobia, we're in a very weird situation in Europe. We are witnessing a rise of right-wing fringe parties, but we are also, especially in Germany, which in a weird way makes me proud to be a German.
What?
We're witnessing a backlash against the right wing. The recent successes of the Greens in Bavaria and in, was it Hessen? Hessen, I think. That they expanded their voter base. So while we've witnessed...
also the hashtag Wir sind mehr.
The hashtag Wir sind mehr and all these things. While we witnessed a stronger right wing in Poland and in Hungary, we've witnessed a strong backlash to that, as opposed to the United States, as opposed to the UK, where Brexit is still going strong for whatever fucking reason.
It's a complete garbage fire.
Yeah, anyway, it's a dumpster fire. So right now, we're seeing a backlash against that right wing thing. So my short answer has to be, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The long answer is, I doubt it, but, I doubt it because as I said, we have all this backlash. We have, the general population doesn't really go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
But the risk that we're running right now is that it's becoming easier and more accepted to be an asshole,
mm-hmm.
just to put it bluntly, to say, to act as if Muslims weren't people. That's what's basically happening. That's what the AfD is doing. Take any text, any tweet, any press release the AfD has on Muslims, replace the word Muslim or Islam with Jew or Judaism, and you will see what the problem is with what they're talking about.
Yeah. Except the only thing, the only tiny difference these days is that they're not going on the topic of race, they're going on culture.
Yes. But it's still the same bullshit.
Yeah, it's absolutely the same bullshit.
So, the risk we're running right now is that we're making it, the German term is hoffähig.
Everyday, acceptable.
It's making it acceptable. Talk. Yeah. And that's what we have to fight against. to say, and that's what I have, why I have a problem with IID and ZDF constantly inviting IFD people, because what the fuck, don't give them a forum.
And not being critical.
And not pressing on other different issues. Did an interview with Gaudan, which was amazing. Well, recently, I think it's 3 months ago or 4 months.
It's June now.
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah, this year is almost over. Yeah. So, yeah, the long answer is I doubt it, because Germany politically is actually in a pretty good place, globally speaking. If you look at the...
Which is a very low bar at this point.
At this point, it is a very low bar. But honestly, Germany is in a pretty good place. If you look at any other country right now, the right-wing forces in Germany are... I mean, of course, right-wing extremism is a huge problem. As we talk about the Frankfurt police force right now, and the police force in general. The problem about this is... I have to quickly go on a tangent. One last tangent. The problem about this is that we, as a culture, as kind of left-leaning people, we love to shit on the police and we love to shit on the army.
Fuck the police.
And that is a huge fucking problem. That is a huge fucking problem. If you don't want the police to be right-wing, join the fucking police. If you don't want the army to be right wing, join the fucking army. Because if you leave the field to the right wingers, they'll take it. If you just say I don't want anything to do with it, of course they'll go there. So that's a huge problem in our society that I have a huge problem with that. I mean, I used to be a soldier. I joined the army out of my own free will. I wanted to see what it was like, and I'm still of the opinion that mandatory armed service should be reinstated, but that's a topic for another.
And on that note, I have one last question for us to answer, for each of us to answer in one short sentence. What are you most grateful for? What do you wish for Christmas? In one short ass sentence. Start, Nathan. Go.
Vincent.
I am grateful that we started this podcast. Yeah, I think for me, this Christmas will be about peace and quiet.
Yeah, I'm just going to be like enjoying time with visiting my brother and his family for Christmas. And I'm looking forward to finding some time for myself at some point over the next couple weeks to watch The Hogfather, because I haven't watched that thing in 3 years and I missed that movie.
I kind of want to watch it now.
It's such a good movie.
Nathan?
The question was, what am I grateful for, and...
What do you wish for?
What do I wish for? Oh, fuck. I wish for... This is going to get depressing. I wish for us, as a people, as humans, to get our fucking shit together.
Good luck with that.
Yes. And barring that... I wish that Star Citizen will release within the next 2 years.
Yes.
That's my wish.
Yes.
And on that note, ladies and gentlemen.
Wait. You didn't answer the question.
Ezzy.
Okay.
I am grateful for this ending I'm about to do. Ahmed, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
No, that's a cheap cut. No. We're not letting you off of it.
I'm really grateful that I'm not getting shot at. We're going to kind of link into the depressing topic we had before.
It's such a low bar.
It's a very low bar at this point. It's a very low bar. Yeah, I mean, I'm basically, you know, I hope we get our shit together. Kind of along the lines of Nathan. I'm looking forward to the Motown music and the pancakes and the peace and quiet. And hopefully no snow, because I hate snow. I'm not good for this shit.
I love the fact that we're looking forward to these really cute personal things.
Yeah. Because we're old.
Because that's basically what it's all about. I mean, in the end, all of us are old. We worry about the world, and we talked about it last time, about the tribalism episode, about Weltschmerz. But in the end, none of us have the power to change the world. We just don't. We're not God.
Speak for yourself.
That's why I share this podcast.
And on that note, though...
One second, though. No.
He's not letting you go.
No, I'm not letting you go. No, we're not God. We cannot change the world. What we can do in the spirit of Hanukkah. No, what we can do is...
Did you feel blasphemic if you said you're a God? Yes, no. Yes or no question?
Yes.
Okay.
No, what we can do is be nice to other people, be nice to ourselves, be excellent.
And on that note,
yes,
Ahmed, now thank you very, very much for being here.
Thank you, Azzy. Thank you, guys.
It was a wonderful episode. And ho, 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 motherfuckers. Have fun.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Happy Kwanzaa.
Thank you guys for listening.
Oh, no, not Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa does not exist.
Thank you guys very much for listening. And hear you next year.